It's 8:45 on the clock. We'll call to order the meeting of Board of Supervisors. We'll start by reciting the Pledge of Allegiance.
I pledge allegiance to the flag of the United States of America and to the Republic for which it stands, one nation, under God, indivisible, with liberty and justice for all.
It's hard when you got the whole half of your mouth full.
The Open Meetings Act is posted on the east wall. Tenants by observation: Jurgens, Hill, Bauman, Dorn, Lytle, Byers, and Tiemann. Consent agenda: general agenda, approve minutes of meeting held May 27, 2015. Approve all claims through June 10, 2015 in the amount of $187,143.94, less the salaries because of some time clock issues here and stuff. That is not ready yet this morning, or whatever, salaries are not. So that we do not have a figure for the salaries. Accept claim number 150600004 to the Atrus Lawn Care, which will be voted on separately under regular agenda. Approve and place on file correspondence received. Approve district court summary fee report and register of deeds fees report for the month of May 2015. Approve 2014 annual report for Paytonia Rescue Squad, Odell Volunteer Fire and Rescue, Adams Rescue Squad, and Pickerel Fire and Rescue. Approve utility permit number 1021 Windstream Nebraska Incorporated, replacing 40 feet of bad cable, will be trenched in 40 feet of cable 4 foot deep in the west shoulder of road in northeast 4 section 19 township 4 north range 6 east of Midland Township. Approve utility permit number 1022 Windstream Nebraska Incorporated, replacing 316 feet of K1 north shoulder of Sargent Road and the west ditch of South First Road 4 foot deep in the southeast 4th of section 22 township 4 north, that should be north, range 6 east, Midland Township. Approve utility permit number 1023, Windstream Nebraska Incorporated, replacing 350 feet. A bad cable will bore 10 foot below flow line of culvert and trench in 300 feet of cable 4 foot deep in the north ditch, located in the northeast 4th, section 34, township 1 north, range 7 east, Barnston Township. Entertain a motion to approve consent agenda.
Move to approve.
Second.
Motion by Lytle, second by Tiemann. Comments?
I have a question about the salaries and how we will approve those so people can get paid. What's the plan on that?
Well, we're trying to get them done before the end of the meeting, so I don't know. But we have.
And my understanding is the reason is that there was a sheriff's deputy that was on vacation and didn't turn his information in until 4:30 yesterday afternoon. So all payroll is completely backed up.
Because of one?
To get the final number. And it's part of the system that we'll deal with later that they don't want to be a part of at this point. So.
Well, the problem comes because you have to have everything in before you can go forward with any reports or paying anything to Social Security. I mean, everything has to be done before they can proceed with the rest of the process.
Monday night, you were there working?
They were there till 7 is what I understand.
Till 7. So there's overtime now in the clerk's office, and then you were there last night till when?
Last night, Don said don't stay late.
So the elected official whose office is in charge of doing payroll basically sent her people home so they wouldn't have to have overtime to do the time cards of an office that doesn't want to do them and backs everything else up. So it's frustrating, but and my understanding is it's not that the administrative assistant over there isn't willing to do it. It's that she can't turn in information that she's not getting. So it's not in no way meant to reflect negatively on Mrs. Lake over there, but that's just the.
It is my personal opinion that if they choose that they don't get their information in on time, Counselor, you tell me if I'm wrong, but we shouldn't approve their salaries because we don't have the information, and they'll just have to wait until next payday.
Well, I think that's what the clerk's trying to do, is to find an accommodation. And we all know the rules, and the clerk's office is very good about calling us on Monday morning sometimes when we're, you know, running real close to the 10 o'clock time frame that we're all designated to get our timesheets in. Again, I won't comment on why theirs didn't get done, but I know the clerk's office is trying to work on that. And the thing is, like she said, it holds everybody up. So hopefully that individual understands that. And
I think our administrative staff over there has tried hard to do what she needs to do to get everything done. And
is there a way to approve everyone else's other than the individual that didn't turn information in, and they can wait till the next pay period?
Well, it's a total number, I think. So you got to do, you know, as we pull that out of payroll, it's everybody. So I think we need to talk slow today so that we can get the.
No.
Well, the good news.
The number, yeah. I mean,
a couple of guys want to go plant corn.
Well, but realistically, it's not just their wages.
It's everybody.
Everybody.
That's what I mean. If we could approve everyone else's other than whoever didn't care to turn things in. We will have more time to talk about that, though, with them later on the agenda, too.
Yeah, that's the good news, is that we're working on a process that's going to make this a more efficient system so this kind of stuff doesn't happen, because it'll all go into a computer and be sped out rather than having to wait for timesheets to be filled out and turned in.
Well, I thought maybe they left it in the car, but that's the same car they brought in from home, so that wasn't where it was.
Well, and the other problem is, you know, for instance,
very good,
if somebody forgot to clock out for lunch and clock back in, then we're having to either call them or wait for them to turn in a sheet. Well, if we don't wait for that sheet, we're going to pay them for 8 hours, and they might have only worked 7 because they went to lunch. You know what I mean? Mm-hmm. So, or 9 hours, because it's going to show them working from 8 to 5 with no lunch. Then you're paying them for 9 hours. Well, then next week they turn in a sheet that says, yeah, I did go to lunch. What? Then you have to go back and take that. I mean,
why don't we set the system up to automatically take lunch out, and then they have to fill out a sheet if they work through lunch?
And that's something that can be, you know, built into that, I think.
I think that's what we should look at doing.
Just important, I think, that we know that what we're approving here. There'll be something else we'll have to come back and do, hopefully, before we leave today. And
right.
And at the risk of going on the Journal Star yesterday, there was a auditor finds $30,000 in questionable payments and basically holds the village board of a particular village accountable for not having appropriate processes in place and receipts. And so if you look at what we're trying to do here is to be very succinct and accountable and keep good records. Yet there's groups that are providing interference, we ultimately are accountable. So I would continue to say, keep pushing to do the right thing, because the right thing is always the right thing. And there are people that watch, and the auditor is one of them. And we will have a state audit this year. And I think that that's a good thing, so that we know that it takes time to do things correctly, and it backs a lot of processes up. So,
on another, for instance, one day last week, I happened to come back from lunch, 7 minutes early. So it says I only took a 45-minute lunch when really, technically, I mean, I'm usually take an hour. So then it's going to pay me for that 15 minutes because it rounds, you know, the other direction. So, and technically I shouldn't be. Just happened to come back a little early.
But if you came back 7 minutes early, we got to pay you for it, though.
Well, so. One of the things I talked to Don is to sit down and look at that as the elected officials to maybe bring a recommendation. In my mind, you do actual time, which the system's set up to do. So if I took 59 minutes, I get paid for 59 minutes. If I took an hour and 5 minutes, and...
Yeah, right now it's set to round.
Yeah, right. Which that's in the handbook, after, so we'll need to adjust the handbook and just say it's actual time, which... is capable of being calculated now. Mm-hmm. And for me, and I know it may not make a lot of difference, but it's easier for everybody to, you know, because when they say, I took an hour, I trust what they said. And like you said, you didn't intend to
No.
45.
Right.
Right. and game the system.
And I didn't even know about it until I turned in my actual timesheet where I kept track of where I thought I was, and she said, well, you have an extra 15 minutes here according to time and attendance. Mm-hmm.
Yeah. And it didn't tell you at the time you clocked back in?
Well, it probably said what time it was, but I didn't.
But it didn't.
I just usually kind of guess.
Yeah.
We don't need them to stand at the time clock for 3 or 4 minutes and wait.
And wait.
Oh,
right. Yeah.
Well,
yeah.
I mean, because I've told them, I said, we got to do this.
Yeah.
And so, quite frankly, and there are people waiting down there at 8 o'clock in the morning mm-hmm. for the clock.
Yeah.
Well, yeah.
Because at the factory, that's the way you got
to
do it.
I think we'd have to look real closely at doing it, not letting it round. I mean,
right.
You're still going to have to set parameters on it.
Myra, I just see Chief Deputy walked in. Just so you know, as we're doing the claims today, it's not the total amount because we didn't have all of the information in from across the street, so it's holding everything up. So that was kind of our discussion today, this morning, before we take that approval. So we'll have to come back later today.
So hopefully before.
She's still working on stuff this morning.
Hopefully, if not, or otherwise, before the end of our meeting here, we'll decide how to proceed with that. But currently, the claims of the $187,000 does not have the salaries in those at the present time that we're approving here. Just so everybody's aware of that. Any more comments on the consent agenda? Vote 7-0 to approve. Regular agenda. Approve.
Hold up. Move. Move we approve claim number 15060004 to Beatrice Lawn Care.
In the amount of $727.50. Yeah. Next page.
Next page.
In the amount of $727.50.
Okay.
Yeah. So we have a motion to approve.
Second.
Motion by Lyle, second by Jurgens to approve the claim to Beatrice Lawn Care, and this is Eric's amount of $727.50. Vote. Six, 0.
He didn't see that.
Yeah. Six in favor with Teeman abstaining. Comments from the public and requests for future agenda items. Anyone may comment at this time. Seeing none, we'll proceed with committee reports. Building and grounds.
Since I was not able to be here, John, if we have anything on building and grounds.
Oh.
Equalization.
Nothing
there either. Just at some time in the future, we'll start setting up those times or whatever. Finance and insurance.
Really nothing new. It was more discussion regarding time clocks and processes, and there's some brief budget items, but about it.
Human resource.
Nothing.
Law enforcement. Emergency management.
Well, we had another flood, which has caused some issues again, and I think for the most part things were handled fairly well when we had a training session here a couple weeks back on the first flood. I think it was unfortunate we had another occurrence, but it seemed like things worked out better. I guess Tim and Doug both, if you have anything you'd like to input here, it'd be a good time to say whatever you got to say, but I think processes worked better. It seemed like traffic flow worked better. It was better all the way around, other than the fact that it was just flat out an inconvenience. I mean, and unfortunately, that's just part of Mother Nature. So I don't know if you guys had anything more that you'd like to add about it, but
it just helped that, you know, we didn't have to close South Bridge. That was one of the big things. That was the nice thing about it, kind of creates more problems. I just want to give a quick update on current levels. It's at 18.2 South Bridge is up north, upstream. It was receding from Crete, so that's good there. They're predicting, which their predictions haven't always been very good. They're usually are a little bit higher what they're predicting. But about 7 o'clock, they're thinking it's going to rise another foot, and most likely that's more coming from upstream from Crete, from West Fort, Big Blue.
I heard we got some pretty good rain coming Thursday and Friday again. Do they give you any predictions?
Nothing yet. I haven't heard anything yet with that. Still a little early. So.
Is like Hickory Road open then or not? Or is that still got water on it?
It was still water on the road there last night.
Last night, yeah. Okay. But the West Courts Bridge is open as of Sunday, like.
Yeah, it's been open since Sunday.
Tim, has there been any discussion with all this water that's traveled down the Blue and down the Little Blue and all in the Republican, the reservoirs downstream? I know I've heard different reports about Tuttle Creek raising, 4 feet in one afternoon last weekend. And
I haven't heard anything from them at all.
Just wonder at some point, are they going to be able to evacuate that water downstream quick enough that it doesn't start backing up?
I would think they probably could. I'm sure they were pretty dry as well. Tuttle's been pretty dry for several years.
Right.
And I think I went by through Manhattan, I don't know, a couple months ago, and I know it was pretty low then. But I don't have anything else at all.
Law enforcement. Yeah.
I'll just give her a little bit. Yesterday morning, Gary and I and John met and Tim met with Bruce Lang and for a communication director person that he's looking at hiring. We had discussion and came up with a set of guidelines from the county. We're hoping to have that for our next committee meeting here so everybody can see that already. Greg was, their attorney was going to finish writing those up, and we'll give them to Roger so we can get those looked at from the county's perspective. And then hopefully on the 24th, if things work out the way you hope always, then we'll have that on the agenda for approval for the new communications director, which the county right now is currently looking at 25% cost, or Bruce keeps now having to figure a $20,000 for that person. So, as the county share, I should say. So, we did meet Tuesday, and they are writing those up. They're going to forward those to you, and then you can look at them. And like I said, the plan is our next committee meeting. And we can have that, and everybody can look at those and see if we need to make adjustments or not, and then approve those on the 24th.
Oh, I guess I don't know if it's emergency management or not, but just on communications, I talked to somebody from Blue Springs. They had a fire yesterday, and their pagers weren't working again. There's some issue with those.
I believe the pagers, we did call, we did have an issue. What happened, I guess, was... I'm sorry, I didn't bring that up. Was Charter Tower lost its power supply. So Shavers come down, replaced the power supply, but they only had a 20 amp power? Whatever. There's 40 and 20. I can't remember if it was watt or amp. I don't remember what it was. It was smaller. So apparently I did some tests after that, but the PD admin was not transmitting and receiving from the dispatch. So Shavers come up, we're checking some of our radios in the their backup dispatch downstairs, and we didn't find anything wrong with the radios. We did some tests. We're trying to do some – I was monitoring tests through another radio of ours, and we just weren't getting the transmissions. But we did page out. Apparently they did get the pages, but we couldn't hear them. And one reason why was on how that computer set up for selecting channels to dispatch to – the one that does all the paging, the sirens, EMA, TAC-2, Med-5, and PD admin are all on one, basically, button. And you can click that button, and you can select individuals if you need to. Well, what happened, someone or the program itself selected South Fire, or South Page. So it was stuck on South Page. So all PD admin traffic was being transmitted and transmitted from dispatch to South Page. No one heard those because obviously it's a paging channel, so there was no tones, you know, provided. So those pagers weren't hearing nothing. So no one could hear anything from it. So once we figured out that that was a problem, we switched to PD admin, and that fixed that problem. But apparently the paging was working down there. And I don't know if that's why it worked down there, because it was off of the south page, whatever. It was already set on south page. Does that make sense?
I think so.
It's too much traffic.
It's confusing. It's
there was too much traffic is what you're saying on that?
No, it was just set on the wrong. It's that on that radio, it's set up as a remote control radio. It's a radio that's not really used often. You know, like they have a Beatrice fire, they have the north, south, and central fire, they have and Beatrice PD. They have individuals there, but this one group is a big old group and has the PD main admin, or not PD main, PD admin, TAC 5, on TAC 2, Med 5, and then all the pages, all the siren pagers, or tones, all go through that. We were concerned that it wasn't working for paging, but apparently it was, but it was just set on a channel instead of being on a channel where it would kind of, I guess the word to use would scan, or it would automatically remote control to that channel. We're supposed to send it.
Why was it on that?
Either someone, you can click that button and select another channel to make it its own standalone channel. Does that make sense? Like a Beatrice PD or...
Doesn't tell
Beatrice
me why.
Why? Someone must have either...
Who is
selected
someone?
One of the dispatchers. Or the computer. No, here, downstairs.
At the 911 center.
But we spent lots and lots and lots of money supposedly to take care of these emergencies.
Right.
And so these things won't happen. And then you come to us and it's happened. And how long, if there was a real somebody in danger, like we've talked about time and again, what happens?
What it was probably operator error, and then a lack of knowledge of not using it as much as what we could have had, and it's just been working with growing pains with learning that system. Does that make sense on how that is? Someone, you know, I didn't realize until very last part of it when we started looking at we can go in and look at the design. Basically, it's a computer program where you can change the screen on however you want it to do. And so we were looking to see if there was any type of properties that was messed up with time, or if there was something set up with a channel not correct or whatever. I'm still learning this. But once we realized that it wasn't set on the right channel, which it's very easy to select that button. It's a touch in the screen and then touching somewhere else, and you can, there's another selection. It's like a Windows program. And you can just touch that and select another channel to make that radio work as just a standalone radio instead of one that they call it the remote control radio, where it selects other things, other directions to go.
Monday nights at 6:30, we get test pages. That's the one time of the week we get test pages. And they always do a bank of those because, you know, when it comes across, we don't get just one tone. I'm getting five or six tones on Monday night at 6:30. So, and I'm not sure here how we're doing it, but down there it was set up so that instead of going and doing 14 individual ones one at a time, the way Dee explained to us years ago was they had basically two banks. They could press a button, all the banks in that would then tone out, and the same way with the others.
Right.
Just a thought, somebody may have done that Monday night and not switched it back. And I don't know. I'm not familiar with the system, but if somebody did that and didn't switch it back, it may have stayed stuck.
The problem with what's going on, there's been doubt in the system that was put in place prior when we were having issues back when we first got the thing up and running May 3rd, or that week after May 3rd, when we started having issues with paging and all that stuff. So now there's a lot of questions to how it's working correctly. We've worked a lot of the bugs out of it, and it works. Sometimes we have to reset the computer. Sometimes that software, for some reason, has this little glitch of its own. It just needs to be reset. Now, I don't know, maybe if it's someone in the, you know, operating it is changing things or something. It's just a computer type thing that needs to be reset. It only takes about 30 seconds to reset it. You're not down long at all. And then you're okay. That's usually what will fix it. This was just something that, you know, I don't sit in front of that thing for a long period of time, so I don't see all those, you know, the normal settings on that, but it was just odd that was set on South Page, which that kind of makes sense on why we weren't hearing it on the PD admin channel, because the radio wasn't set to transmit and receive on that. The radio was transmitting, but it wasn't going to the right designation. And it was going to basically a dead frequency, which basically does not open until there is a tone that opens those pagers. Same way with the sirens. You have to have a tone to open those sirens to tell it to accept that transmission. So it was just basically being sent to dead space.
I am more and more convinced that all this happens purely by magic. I mean, really?
I really don't know what happened. But I can easily show you. I could show you. You come down there. I can show you how it happened. But I don't know if someone did it, on purpose. I mean, they're touching screens. I mean, it just happens.
That makes more sense, because that's what I was getting at, is if they were sending it to this group, there still should have been pages going out. Mm-hmm. But now that you've explained that it has to go to open and close it, that makes more mm-hmm. sense. That's what I was getting at.
It still
should have paged.
The people down south that needed the page actually did get it, though?
Apparently they did, because we did call them. I was there, and we did call them personally and say, hey, there is a fire down there. On a vehicle, can you have your local fire? That was kind of the backup to the backup, you know, where we had to call them personally to say, hey, you know, get your people together and respond. But we did get calls later saying that they did hear the pages. We did some test pages. But we couldn't hear them because I had my radio set on South Page. No. What did I have it on? I don't remember. Anyway, I could not hear that page. We were monitoring PD admin. We couldn't hear the PD admin because it was going somewhere else. It wasn't going the correct place. I can show you if you want to come down. I can show you what happened.
I know nothing about that stuff. I pay you.
I know.
So that you'll take care of it and your staff will take care of it. And so we don't have a family down south somewhere that dies because we didn't take care of it.
We took care of it. They got paged out. We called them personally, and they responded. And the paging didn't go out. We did test pages up north, and it worked like it was supposed to. Just for some reason, that was just set that way.
Final backup plan, because if the dispatcher doesn't get you, if somebody doesn't respond to that page, you know, they'll send out so many, somebody doesn't respond. Because years ago up there at Adams, we had that too. They've got a list of people that they can call, and they start calling and stuff. So, I mean,
the dispatch handled it correctly.
Plan.
They
it's
did.
Not as quick, but, I mean, there's only so much you can do there, too. Yeah, it's... Bruce did give a little update. Some of the equipment's starting to come in down there, but then I believe one of the consoles or something of it, but then he says there's so many steps what they still have to follow. And you can't go and do step 7. You got to do step 1 and stuff. So it'll be a period of time yet before it's up and going. But they have some of it in, and they're starting to test some of it, and it's moving forward.
Yeah, they've been doing radio tests out of the police department yesterday afternoon. But if you want to know a better explanation, I can show you. Just come down and I'll show you what happened with that. Don't know how or why. I just can't say someone did it because I didn't see someone do it. It just, most likely that's what happened, but I don't have any other option or answer for that.
Anything else on law enforcement emergency management?
The only other update we had on Monday morning was there was another company that contacted Myron as far as taking a peek at that Blue Valley or the Blue Springs Tower. And
sent them an email back, and I even called them left a voicemail. So hopefully we'll get in contact with them and see what options they have available.
So that's your semi-annual, monthly update on that.
Semi-annual.
Road and bridge.
Gary. Okay. Of course, the hot topic was roads, bridges, culverts, flooding. As of Monday, Galen reported we had approximately $67,000 worth of rock and gravel put on the road because of the first storm damage. Galen's been going around with FEMA to show them the damage that we did have, and their comment, I remember Galen said their comment was, you know, we can restore the road, or we want to restore the road to the original, the way it was. So if that means a layer of rock and some gravel later put on that road to make it like it was again, those funds, well, let's say should be paid for. But keep in mind, this area, I just talked to Galen this morning, has not been declared a disaster area yet. So the president's too busy playing golf or something. But anyway, we're keeping track of all these funds we're putting out there, but as today, it's not been declared yet. So that's the first one I'm talking about. The county's been hauling spot rock to the townships now, in between everything else. Been cleaning out ditches, corn stalks. Galen said there's 9 sites that he has turned into the NDOR on major county roads to determine if they qualify for state funding. So that's another department he's been working with, the state FEMA part. On those, if they are approved, that's an 80-20 match. As of Monday, our county's estimate on damage from the first storm is $441,000, and I'm sure that's going to probably grow yet. There's been 21 locations closed throughout the county from the last 2 storms. We spoke about this earlier. There's still, as of last night, there was water over Hickory Road yet, so it's slow to regress down.
And that was one of the roads that got rock hauled on after the first one, and a good likelihood to have rock or gravel again. I mean, it's some of these are multiple times. Just
right. Also, in contact with the road department, I think I'm right on this. Correct me if I'm wrong, but approximately July 28th through October 1st is when the official time for the Coke shutdown is going to be, and they're asking about putting some signs so the help can cross the pavement, worker zone, slow down signs, and they were talking about approximately 1,000 workers out there doing this job. So it's going to be a lot of traffic, a lot of people in town during that time. So,
and it would really help to have Hickory Road open by then.
Yeah. Well, we'll see what it does tonight.
Or we can stage some canoes. And
yeah. The last bit of information, the turtles are still crossing the road. That's it.
One other thing. I believe it was Monday. Yeah, Monday night, one of the grader operators called and wanted to know if they could put in some overtime. And,
yeah.
And I did call Matt and John and Terry then, got approval from the Road and Bridge Committee then, so that down here at the Highway Department, the okay to do overtime. The road graders out there 8-hour day, 2 days a week, and then it rains the other 3. They're just not getting the roads caught back up. We okayed, told Galen to go ahead and do what you need to work at getting these roads back in condition, hauling the rock and grading and stuff. Because, no, there's 3, 4, 5 hours of sunlight left yet in a day. And some of the guys, some not all of them it may work for, but some of them sure worked for to go out there and put in some overtime and trying to get our roads back to where we need to get them before basically the next storm or rain event comes again, which it looks like it's supposed to here.
Myron, I had called Galen about that the next day, and I said, you know, go ahead and encourage, you know, if somebody wants to work overtime, that not just motor graders, but rock haulers and everything else that goes with it. So,
yeah. And correct me if I'm right or wrong, Galen, I guess, but part of the we are keeping track of this for FEMA. Most of this is still considered, you know, what would be damage from the storms. And they said we're keeping track of some of, not all of it, but we're keeping track of all these hours so that the possibility that we can turn them into FEMA if we get approved too here yet and stuff. So,
but, all the material, all hours, equipment, whatever, it's all kept track of. The material as we haul it, the rock tickets, the locations put on top of the tickets, storm damage, that's all going per location. So. And they keep saying, take pictures, pictures, pictures. So we're taking a lot of pictures before and after we do a repair. So just doing what they asked to have done.
Anything else, Road and Bridge?
Nope.
Next up on the agenda is Rick Nation to present the Blue Valley Community Action Annual Report. Looked like you were here.
One, but I'll take another one.
Sure.
Thank you.
Thank you.
This is our, this is our annual report for the past year. I appreciate the opportunity to come talk to you about it. I will go through it, but I won't go through it every page because I know your time is limited. I'm going to run out.
Excuse me. I'm losing my voice this morning.
If I could have you look to page 3 on the report. This is information about our clientele, and there's a couple of things I like to point out because they sort of fly in the face of what you might think the general perception is. One of them is that our clients are primarily employed or former employees. 55% of our clients have some type of job. And 26% of them are retired. So the majority of our clients have been people who either work or have worked in the past. The other thing that I like to point out is the family structure. The general population in our service area is 2.55 people per household. Our clients, there's only 2.0 persons per household. So, you know, when it's not, even though we're dealing with low income folks, we're not dealing with large families for the most part. It sort of flies in the face of what people perceive. But the thing that does point out a difference in our clientele than the general population is their shelter arrangements. In Nebraska, 74% of people either are buying or own their own homes. But among our clientele, 72% are renters, and 12% of those renters are subsidized renters. So that seems to be the really defining issue, and that's one of the reasons why we do so much in housing, and we do quite a bit of housing here in Beatrice. We one of the projects we have here in Beatrice is what we call Sunset Crown, and that is a private for-profit operation that we are the general partner on, and after the tax credit period of 15 years, the investors get out, and then the property becomes part of Blue Valley Community Action Incorporated, a nonprofit entity, and so and that will happen this next year. Then those homes, they were always intended to be sold to the people. And so what happens is over these 15 years that the investors have been involved, we've been setting aside $50 a month from their rent into an escrow account. And so these folks would have the opportunity to become homeowners after that period of time. And so we'll start selling those to some of those people who live there. And that gets to this issue about primarily not having any assets and not having that home. If we can move more people to home ownership, but we do it in a way that they don't fail. I mean, we do an awful lot of training with the people in those units. We teach them how to be homeowners, some of the ins and outs of home ownership, and so that we can give them some asset to fall back on, because all of us in our lifetime have something that happens that we weren't planning, and it's going to be more costly than we hoped, and I mean, we all get it. But we all have something to fall, all of us who own homes have something to fall back on. If we have to, we take out a second mortgage on a house. You know, there's all kinds of ways that when you have an asset to deal with, but a lot of our clientele do not have those assets. They do not own a home. They do not have a college degree in most cases. They don't have the opportunity to get the kind of things that all of us would face, but with no backup for that. So that and the next few pages talk about our programs. A lot of them are deal with food, and that's what, in one way, that's what we're most known for, our food programs, but that's because I think it's so visible, but that's really not our goal. It's to just feed people. That's a way of getting them to move on. It's hard for them to focus on a future when they're having to figure out where they're going to get their next meal. So you've got to get that taken care of before you can get them moving on to the other things that we're trying to do. I'm not going to go through all of these things. I do want to point out on page 9 that we have a new program that started this past year, Supportive Services for Veteran Families, and that's looking for homeless veterans and trying to help them out with that. And then you can see there's an awful lot of other programs that deal with either scholarships or housing. We have a program called the Individual Development Accounts, and we've had a local bank be very generous and matching. And we have a federal grant through our state association that puts aside one third, and the local bank is putting through another third, and then individual has to come up with the third. And what they do is it's a savings account up to $1,500 from each of us. And so they can turn $1,500 into $4,500 towards either a down payment on a house, beginning or expansion of a new business, or go to college. And so all those are aimed at asset building. And because what we found is you can get a person a job, but if they have no backup, they're still going to face that one-time situation that's bound to come up, and they're going to be right back into poverty. So we're stressing an awful lot on asset building as well as income development. So while we're working for finding people jobs, we're also trying to get them assets. And so that's why you see on some of these next few pages a lot of things on housing and that. We also do some health programs. We work with the local health departments and in fact, Blue Valley is in a partnership with 5 separate health departments over the eastern part of Nebraska trying to generate some additional services in the area. Our Head Start program, we do 0 to 5-year-old program now, and we're working closely with Beatrice Schools so that we have a partnership there, and that partnership has resulted in us having a lot more kids accessing those kind of services. We just found out last week that we are expanding some of the early childhood stuff with, we had a grant for we wrote the grant, but it's for the Seward, Milford, and Utica school districts, or Centennial, I guess it is, not Utica, school districts, and we'll be operating that what's called a sixpence program for them. So just trying to keep those collaborations going. Almost all of our programs deal with some kind of collaboration or another. On page I've got to get my On page 18, I guess it is. I left my glasses back in my seat there. These are new programs. Project Everlast deals with children coming off of foster care who don't have a residence to go to and need to be independent. So we're working with them on different programs, and that IDA program we mentioned was one of them. But we do an awful lot of other programs and trying to just tap them into services. The other new program is AmeriCorps Vista program, and that has two parts. One deals again with children, and those are developmental assets. We're working with their developmental assets, and there's a program called 40 developmental assets, and we apply that to that program. And the second part of that was a Vista Veterans program, which is basically trying to expand our capacity to deal with veterans. And so picture down there, and you see on the bottom of that page, Blue Valley was one of the initial members of what the government calls employers for national service. We've had real good luck hiring people who formerly were had national service. And so that's me and Kalina Lachansky, who's from here, and Beatrice, who's our youth services director. And the gal behind the podium is the national director. They announced a program in Nebraska because we had some of the first ones to join in. So I was pleased that we were one of those. And the former first lady is there also. The next two pages deal with our volunteers. Foster grandparent, pioneer foster grandparents, started here originally in Beatrice with the BSDC. Several years later, they didn't want to operate it anymore, and Blue Valley took over the sponsorship of that program. It's the oldest foster grandparent program in the state, and it's a fairly successful program for us. And so that's... You can see the numbers there. I'm not going to go through all the details. You can read yourself. Our Friends of Blue Valley is basically a volunteer bureau that we set up. Mostly it helps us with recruiting and training and monitoring volunteers, but we also have done that for other organizations as well on occasion. We have our annual fundraising Duck and Run event. Usually we have it at Crystal Springs Park, but as you probably are well aware, we've had a little rain lately, and Crystal Springs Park was not really suitable this year, so we moved it to City Park, which also had a little flooding, and of course rained on us, but we had a pretty good time just the same, and it was a fairly good fundraiser, even though of the bad weather and the wetness, and we had to be very creative about our duck run, so we built some scaffolding around the fountain to have the ducks flow someplace. The picture at the very bottom there is one of our volunteers from Henderson, and she was named the National Volunteer of the Year among community action agencies. And the person handing her the plaque is Sergeant Shriver's son, and I can't remember his name, I'm sorry. But I tell you this, and you'll probably appreciate, some of you will probably appreciate this. She, in front of 1,500 people, she accepted the award, and she was very pleased to get the award, even if she was getting it from a Democrat. So, she's always been a little speaker of mind kind of person. Anyway, so the next page is about our staff, and as you might guess, majority of us, of our staff are women, and the majority of them are Caucasians and non-Hispanic. They're mostly of working age. There's only a few of us who are sort of past that. And the next page, which says BVC contributions, quite frankly, this was a blank page when we had to fill it up with something. And while we were getting ready for our 50th anniversary, which starts in October and goes to next year, we had been doing a little research on some of the stuff over the past, and so we came up with some things, and we said, well, let's put some of those things in this year since it's almost time for our 50th anniversary, and we'll just fill it up until we run out of space. And then, so that's part of our list of things, and we thought people would be sort of interesting. Mostly we talk about what we help people and families with. This is more of a economic development type things with things we built or helped get built and for other organizations and for ourselves, I guess. The next two pages are about finances. There's good news and there's bad news. There's the bad news is at the very top of the page 24. My eyes are right. Yeah. You can see we brought in a little less than what we spent last year, and that's not a trend we're hoping to set. But we do have reserves. That's not going to put us in any trouble. But and it is, after all, an audited figure, so it's a one-time situation. But it's not the way we'd like it to show up, so we're going to be working on that. The good news, I guess, for you folks is that little yellow sliver on the left pie chart. Local government support is 1% of our total budget. So the money that you give us, whatever you do, is returned. $1 gets you $129.42 in return. So you get a pretty good return on investment with us. But not talking here about budget. So the middle thing is about those housing programs I told you about. These are the remaining investor housing units. We had 9 to begin with. Most of those were not leased to own. They were just rental units. These, all the remaining ones, are leased to own. And the first one to come off is going to be Sunset Crown this year, and then the others will come off. But right now, those are separate corporations. They don't show up in our financial reports because they're private companies. Once the investors leave, the partnership will break up. The assets will assets, revenues, and liabilities will revert to Blue Valley. So it was a good deal for us to get involved in because it improved our assets. When I came to Blue Valley more than 38 years ago, they didn't have 10 cents worth of assets. And as we were talking about earlier, if you're going to try to do something, you got to have something to fall back on. And so that was one of my goals, and we're getting there. The next few pages is just where our offices are all located, and the last page is about thanking some of our donors. Most of our donors are really the small donors. Some of them, a lot of them, are our clients. Some of them donate their time, but some of them donate a little bit of money, and that's it. Attached, I believe, in there is a little brochure about our board of directors, and it tells what openings there are. You folks are entitled to 2 slots on the board, an alternate, a representative, and an alternate. I don't think you've chosen to do an alternate at this point, if I remember correctly. And the other person,
I don't think we have anybody from the board sitting on BVCA board at this point since Kathy Setzer.
No, Eric is.
Eric is, but, okay.
I talked to Don. I'm moving back out because of conflicts on that. We haven't reappointed anyone yet.
We have. Okay.
Well, then that's not in our brochure yet because we were hoping to keep you.
You may get me as a
alternate,
as a non-voting type person or something.
Okay. Well, we'll work on that. The other position is the private sector alternate, and we had someone from the Pinnacle Bank, but they had a conflict, so we lost her as well. So, but that's my report for the year. And
you want to introduce the person who totally runs BVCA? Who
my boss is my administrative director,
Heather
Lytle.
Heather Lytle.
She puts this together for us. So
he does a fantastic job.
And it's not all done in-house. So yes, and she's been with me for a long time. And if she ever leaves, I'm retiring. So any other questions or anything? Anybody? We appreciate your support, and we consider ourselves partners with you. If you ever get cases of public assistance need, if they haven't come to us first, you know, we always recommend that you send them to us first because we can help save you some money that way as well.
Thank you, Rick, for all you do.
Thank you, folks. You have a good day.
Entertain a motion to put the report on file.
So moved.
Second.
Got a motion by Lytle, second by Hill. Vote 7-0 in favor. next, approve or disapprove recommendation for special designated liquor license for Gage County Fairgrounds Speedway and Beer Garden Midway for the Gage County Fair July 22nd through the 26th. Steve? Well, hold on. We need a motion to approve.
I'll make a motion to approve. Make a motion to approve.
I'll second.
Okay, motion by Terry, or by Juergens, second by Lytle. But Steve?
What words here?
Good morning. I'm Steve Whitwer. I'm representing Gage County Ag Society. And obviously, there's not too much to say. The special designated license we ask for each year during the Gage County Fair. This year, our fair's theme is Sweet Things Happen at the Gage County Fair. So we've got a lot of new interesting things planned. Last year, our fair was very successful. We had someplace between 34 and 36,000 people come through our gates during the five-day, actually six-day event, which opens up with the Agman's Barbecue on Tuesday. Anyway, the liquor licenses are here. We've got something different happen. The Beatrice Harmonizers are going to be out for the Ag Businessman's Barbecue on Tuesday night, so feel free to come out. You'll see the Harmonizers singing out in our beer garden, but there's no beer that night. It's just open, and that's where they're going to be underneath the tent and the awning, so we can entertain people out there too. So anyway, do you have any questions about our SDLs?
This is just for the beer garden, because this is separate than the grandstands.
Yeah. Well, there's two of them here, Myron. One is for the beer garden, which runs Wednesday, Thursday, Friday, and Saturday evenings. Okay. The other one is for the two nights of entertainment, which we have to get an SDL for the grandstands because we let liquor or beer go down on the track in front of the stage, and our normal liquor license does not cover that area. That's why we have to ask for the SDL for that.
So there are actually two of them. One is for the...
Yeah, there's two different ones, yes. That is correct. Okay. Any other questions?
Questions?
He also has the approval from Sheriff.
Yeah.
Yeah, we have a letter
from... I've met with Sheriff Gustafson last week on this.
With Gus, and we have a letter from Gus that says the Gage County Sheriff's Office is fully aware of the applicant's request and intention to hold this function, and we do not oppose the issuance of a special designated license. No comments? No questions?
Okay.
We need to wait for Eric to come back to vote here. Or?
Gotta shut him off if he doesn't want
to. Yeah.
But he's out of the room.
He's stepped out for a minute, otherwise, we won't record his vote, but otherwise, go ahead and vote. No, Eric. Eric's will be abstaining.
Okay.
Yeah. 6-0 in favor. Next, approve or disapprove resolution on special use permit number 2015-2 for placement of poultry barns located in the northwest 1/4 of Section 22 Highland Township.
Motion to approve.
Second.
Motion by Bauman, seconded by Juergens. And this is... somewhere we have a resolution here. This is, we had the public hearing 2 weeks ago for the poultry barn up in Northern Gage County. And as we normally do, we wait 2 weeks so that if the board has questions or something they would like checked into, that they can look at this. Would you like to comment again or talk about it at all? Or otherwise?
Questions, I guess.
Okay. Any questions?
I'll just comment that I have a cousin that lives right down the road. Doesn't have an issue with it. One of the closest houses to it.
And I think you've done a good job again, too. Took a lot of time, effort, work, and looked into all the things you need to do. And Lisa did text me that she could not be here this morning. But, you know, the zoning board did approve this also. And the zoning board did all the checking into to make sure that you met all of our county's regulations, which you have or whatever. We did have some comments from a lady that lives a little bit east there, and I'll send her some comments back. She just had questions more than anything what was going to happen or whatever, so we'll do that. But otherwise, any other comments? No, thank you for doing this, and thank you for helping the young individual and keeping those guys in Gage County and active and farming. So.
Make him work hard.
Yeah. That's great to have him and stuff. So, otherwise, vote. 6-0 again in favor. Teeman abstaining. Thank you, guys. And Charles?
Yeah, thank you.
Discussion on agreement with NEH.
Really, just if people had an opportunity to peruse the agreement, if there was anything else that was out there, I think we're going to meet tomorrow morning a little bit with the mayor and just talk a little bit. So if they're, you know, look at that, because we need to approve that at the next meeting, I believe.
On the 24th. But originally we talked about maybe we'd approve it here on the 10th, and the timing and everything just hasn't worked out yet, and to have any upgrades or whatever. But some of the board members are going to meet with Mayor and some of the people from Engage tomorrow, and a couple of city council people, and at that time, then any additions or corrections they will be getting done and forwarded to you two, and that should be on the agenda for the 24th, because originally the city council wanted to do it next Monday night, I believe. Their meeting is originally, that was their goal or whatever, so we'll see how things work out there. But again, don't see a lot of major changes or whatever, but felt that they should, each of us get together and sit down and visit and see if there's some goals or other things or whatever, or if there's any changes, I guess. So, discussion on cameras, software, and hardware purchase from Centrix and security issues here at the courthouse, I guess. So, Dave?
We have invited Phil Fenton from Centrix Security to come down and explain the cameras better. I'm going to get Brian Davidson down here real quick. He has been having conversations with what he feels is needed the most at this time. So I think he's done with court, hopefully. And
great.
I was wondering, if I swung this way and shot the projector that way, do you think that would work? See, there's power right here.
Oh, there's Brian.
Put it back there, maybe better.
Or where?
Oh, okay.
Against that wall.
Yeah, can you move it back there against the wall or not?
Well,
or what works good for you? So that these guys can see.
Have you done this before? Where you had a projector?
Yeah. What we usually do. A lot of times we will put it back.
Okay, that'll work too.
Does that work here?
Yep.
Was it nice?
I didn't get a chance to talk first. I was going to give him a call right
here.
You don't need that.
Tomorrow morning.
I just don't understand that word.
Just
talk about it. I'm sure he'll tell us all about it.
There'll be three or four of us. Or who else?
Maybe Matt.
Byron and I will be gone through the end of the year.
He likes us.
Good stuff.
Oh, that's right. You got meetings.
I was just talking to Rich. It's come from. I ate like 20 pounds of this the other day.
I think Bauman makes it.
Makes them. Bauman makes it.
Thank you, babe.
I don't know how to read.
We keep missing each other, but.
And explain a little bit here, I guess, what's kind of getting proposed, so we could have a brief description before you start showing. I mean, at last time we were in executive session when they brought this forward, so that.
And introduce our NERMA rep that we have here.
So today,
Phil from Centrix, and that's who originally installed, then that we went through to get this system installed into for the camera system. And it incorporates a couple other things into that with some of the security portion of it and everything. So we met back with him maybe a month and a half ago or so, and had walked around. We'd kind of touched on this in the committee meeting. Went through the whole facility, inside, outside, every floor, and designated or identified those areas that might be deficient for coverage for the camera system that we currently have. And so what do we need to do as far as maybe some upgrades and things with software and the server and things of that nature, and then incorporating the screening station into that to monitor those areas and then see what would work best for coverage for the facility. And so after we identified those areas, I don't know what Dave has actually handed out to you, if it's a quote or whatever, but a lot of those are designated the different types of cameras and some of the newer technology that's out there that might give us a better bang for our buck, so to speak, on coverage areas. And there are quite a few areas that we identified that we feel are needs for coverage in the courthouse and in the exterior of the building. So those are what we're going to talk about a little bit today, those areas. Sergeant Davidson has been in contact back and forth with Phil on some different things concerning that, and I know one of the issues of concern from some at the committee meeting was the number of cameras, and so we'll kind of touch base on that, give you a little better feel for that maybe, and what we're looking at. I know that Brian had indicated, there was a couple maybe that had come up there and looked at the monitor at the screening station on the third floor and kind of what it is to get a visual of what we're trying to describe to you, and as for how that would work for coverage and how you can monitor that many cameras and how you designate the special cameras maybe what we would refer to as a higher priority area. And so then another concern is how long do we keep this data archived, and the video footage that we have, and how some of these cameras are motion activated. It records all the time, but it might bring up a special event, you know, by motion or a panic alarm. There was some concern about how that would work, and in the elected officials' offices on the customer side, and so, you know, we really have a lot of things that encompass this more than just adding some cameras. So Mr. Byers wanted Terry Baxter to be contacted to find out how long that footage should be archived. The answer is a little bit arbitrary depending upon the individual's train of thought. Depends on the amount of money you want to spend, you know, on how big the server is. So Terry Baxter from NIRMA, for the law enforcement specialist, is here today. So he can maybe shed some more light on that, answer any questions that you might have. And you know, he's at our office quite a bit, and so we have conversations, you know, on multiple topics, you know, throughout the year. So he will be here, you know, to answer those questions for you if those concerns are, and maybe some liability issues for trips, you know, slip, trips, and falls, not only for the evidentiary purpose for law enforcement and the footage that we have and is. So that's kind of where we have led up to today. So this is an opportunity for you to, you know, ask questions and voice concerns, and then maybe we can hopefully come to some kind of an agreement on what maybe a feasible number is, and, you know, some of those priorities. And we need to update some software and some hardware. We know that, not just for the camera portion, but the video lag that we have currently is anywhere from, you know, 10 to 12 seconds. You know, sometimes it's not quite that long, but, you know, we've done some testing on that with Centrix has assisted us on that, and Dave and Brian and everybody who kind of worked together in conjunction, you know, to try and find a solution. And so we've got some of those solutions potentially figured out here today, so we can move forward and get those rectified, hopefully. So, Mr.
Was there that much lag when the system went in?
Well, no. Initially, and it's a little bit, you know, and Phil's probably going to be able to touch base on this better than me, but so since we've added this third floor screening station, we call that a client, you know, for another client, and so we have a computer located somewhere else. So the more clients that you have in the system, and we face the same thing over at the sheriff's office with our system there. The amount of high-definition video and things of that nature, it's got to get choked down at some point to get there and then process back out to the computer that's viewing it. So the more clients you have, you know, it can potentially slow down the whole system. But if you watch it right at the where it comes out of the server, you know, you have very little lag. But so, of course, if you add more cameras, you know, you multiply that problem and things. But so
I'd like to add on to what Doug said. When this was designed originally, we did not have the third floor screening station. And with cameras, it does take a lot of information. So our computer downstairs does work well with what we had downstairs for the original system. But it was when we added this additional hallway third floor camera system is where it's really pulling it down.
How many clients are there? How many people are viewing this?
Well, that is a little bit, it fluctuates a little bit. So the system that we have, so if you are authorized and you have the software installed on a computer, so, you know, we have the area in the radio room, you know, that is monitored, you know, all the cameras are. So if somebody's down there, that stays on all the time, and that's pretty much a direct link if I can simplify it down, you know. So that would be like the main client, if you want to call it that. And then so if Brian or his folks that are working security on the third floor, so we would have a client located there. Okay, so we also have the ability with this system so that we can remotely monitor this, you know, from an internet connection. So on a daily basis, I don't want to give specifics of how many that could be, obviously, but, you know, that could be as many as potentially, you know, total, maybe four or five. We just don't have everybody monitoring that all the time. I mean, we have that ability, but the more people that you add to that and then you go through a network connection, you know, it just slows it down that much more. So Brian and his folks there are the main people that are monitoring that, but for a after hours event or something that may occur, or to check on it throughout the night, you know, things of that nature, we have that capability. But when one more person logs on, you know, you can just slow it down that much more. So
that would be my question: is during the day when it's slow, when you need to see it, why are there people remotely logging on to that?
Well, generally there aren't.
Okay.
Generally there aren't. The third floor is the main, but for example, if I wanted to log on and I wanted to look at the cameras, I could do that. Generally, I won't do that because I already know that it's slow, number one, and then it's just going to make it that much worse for the screening station. So we have the ability to do that, but as a general rule, there aren't, like, people just like looking around on there seeing what's going on just to be curious.
Do we know that? I mean, can you track that and see who's logging in?
That's a good question that I don't know the answer to that.
I was curious.
Yes, you can.
That'd be nice to know if someone's on there that...
It's usually only people, there's a few people in our office that even have that knowledge that you can do that or that have the ability to do that.
They can do that from their home?
You can do it from your home, but it can only be on the computer that has that software loaded onto it. So you can't just, anybody just go...
Do we have that software loaded on personal non-county computers at home?
No.
Okay.
No. In fact, it's probably only mine and maybe one other person that has it at the sheriff's office right now.
So we have some ad-eye hacking things as far as the software is concerned. And
that's probably a question for Mr. Phil.
We see it all over the country now with the hacking issues.
Of course you can. That's right. There's
so there's a concern.
Cybersecurity is always a big issue. So I'll turn it over to Phil. I guess I don't want to stand up here and talk about things that I can't speak about that great, so I'll let Phil be the expert here and give us his presentation.
Phil, give us your name and the company you're with and so on, yes, for the record.
Can I stand here? Or?
Yep, because okay. That's Mike. Easy to pick you up. Yep.
Okay, Phil Fenton with Centric Security. We're out of Omaha, and we have a office in Lincoln as well. As Dave had said, we were able to install the original system with the remodel. And so that went really, really well. You guys have been a great customer, so I want to thank the county for that. With that, IP video, you probably see a lot on the news about robberies at gas stations and things like that, and you'll see cameras that are really good and ones that are not so good. And then in addition, in the security world, we have an issue, I call it the CSI effect, that people think that you can take a camera and zoom in and see someone's eye color and read their lips and all that, and that's just not the case. So we have to be practical and set the right expectations when we do camera design. And so that's why today Brian had asked me if I could come out and actually show you some of the views. I'm not really here to sell you on anything or to teach you everything about IP video, but one thing that we found as a security integrator is that IP video is very fickle in that you're experiencing it now. No issues with the original design, but as you grow the system, i.e. you doubled your viewing capacity, you bog down the system a little bit. So we've learned this the hard way. When we do a complete design and an upgrade, we get our manufacturers involved, and we have them tell us what the hardware specs need to be. Hardware meaning your computer and your server. So with this go-around, I think we started with about adding 26 cameras or so, and then Brian was asked to, okay, let's take a look at the top 10 that you would like. Brian had some specifics in regards to the viewing station. He wanted to make sure that we could, I use the word guarantee, but support the fact that, hey, this is a crucial thing, especially when court is in session, and we want to make sure we don't have any lag time. And so we've gone to our manufacturer, whom you guys use and have since the system was installed, and have all those specs. We also have an inside IT person. I did not bring him today. I'm not an IT person, so if any of you all are, if I don't have the answer, I'll get that answer to you. But we design a lot of IP security systems. It's over a third of our business. And so we've learned the hard way, and we've come up with the solution here that we feel is going to meet your needs. Also, the IP cameras are somewhat future-proof, in that the cameras that you've put in 6 years ago, actually there are 5 years, they're still working pretty well. They serve at their purpose. We're not needing to replace any, which is nice. The cameras that you are being proposed to, I want to show you a few views of those. And they're quite a bit better, probably about twice as better than the cameras that you have, just because that's where the technology has gone. And when I say that, I mean more images per second. For example, if you look at a on the news, if you look at like a gas station robbery 5 years ago, it's real grainy. You'll see a person walk across the room, and then you'll see him 3 seconds later somewhere else. That's all been improved, and now we have what we call IP video. So in layman's terms, if you look at a time-lapse VCR, which is one frame per second, you can now look at these at 15 to 30 frames per second, just to give you an idea. So what you have in front of you, and I apologize, it's so small, I have to use my reading glasses. I wanted to break out the quote in four areas, and I got some guidance from Brian as well. That was very helpful. One was just adding the cameras, and we're going to look at some view there, views of those cameras. The second one is the server and the client PC and the switches. So what that is, think of that as the brains of the system, upgrading the brains. If you look at how many of you might have the same computer that you had 5 or 6 years ago, you probably don't. And if you do, it's probably ready for an upgrade. And that's what we're doing here. The server needs a technology refresh. Same with the software. The software for the cameras haven't been touched, you know, in so many years, and so they just need an upgrade. So that's the second sheet. The third
sheet is the software. Look at this as what it is it's really support that the cameras are going to work the way they're designed to. They're going to work on your software. Also, it's a 3-year support agreement. So in the initial install, if we do the 10 cameras, we'll come out and load the new server, the client, the switch, add the switches, add the cameras, and load the new software and get you all up to speed. And then we'll come out. So the first year we'll come out, do all the software with the install. The second year we come out again about a year later and load the latest and greatest software, test everything, train Brian's staff on its use. And then the third year we do that. So this agreement here, which is labeled Milestone 3-Year Opt-In Software, is just that. It's those three trips, and it's the latest and greatest software for the 36 months.
So we're, if you take four pages, which is about $47,000, that's what we're talking about?
Yes. The last page, Dave wanted me to include if we ran the cable for those 10 cameras, and that's what that quote would be. That's good and bad, just because the fact that we know the ins and outs of the building, and we know how intricate it is, and so we know the labor it's going to take, and we'll install it the way we installed the original system, which will be aesthetically pleasing, and we always install the right way. I did talk to Dave a little bit. If there's a local contractor maybe that would want to run the cable and is familiar with the building, we're totally fine with that. We'll just give them the instruction.
On the software, how do you price software that hasn't been invented yet?
What happens is the manufacturer has someone that's off a plan, like the county is, they have a 3-year opt-in is what it's called. And so what they do is they provide the support, which is the new software. They guarantee that there'll be at least one software upgrade throughout the term of the 12 months.
Is there any value in this? I mean, it's, and I'm going to be very just over simplistic on this.
Sure.
It's a camera. It takes pictures.
Yeah.
Next year, that same software is still going to take pictures.
Yeah.
Next year, that camera is still going to take. I mean, what's the benefit here?
It's a very good question. Basically, how it works is because that camera is a computer, every camera that you have is a web browser, and there's no guarantee that newer software will work on older cameras. And so what you're buying into is the support. You're buying into the new features, the technology, and then the support that it's going to work. Also, it's all Microsoft Windows-based. And so as they make their improvements, the software stays up to speed with it. It's kind of like getting... I'm not necessarily recommending that you do it every year, because I think there was some cost savings there. Unfortunately, the world we live in, the manufacturer prices it that way so that it benefits you if you do renew it every year. And they live in a world of that recurring revenue, but they have hundreds of programmers and engineers on staff, too, that helps pay that. But what it's doing, I'll give you an example. And I won't get too deep into this, but, for example, the software you have now, I don't believe it will work with an iPad, will it, the software you have now? I don't think it will. The new software does. So how someone mentioned, well, why are you giving people access? They're really not. Everything is password protected, like Doug had said. But... if you had the city police or the county and you wanted to be able to have the software on their iPads in case something went down, you could do that. Or you could dedicate an iPad. And I can show you that. We have our cameras on this. So it does technology like that. The other thing it does, which is kind of cool, and again, I'm not sure how often you would use it or who you would use it, but maybe your court officers or someone would use it as, they have a virtual recorder. It's like you can take your iPhone or any, your Droid, and if something goes down, you can record it as a channel, and it goes right to your server. So if there's a fight or something that breaks out, you can record everything from your iPhone. So you're getting latest and greatest technology, but really what you're buying into is, okay, you've invested in the system. We're going to at least provide you a guarantee that if Microsoft comes out with an upgrade or a change or a bug, we're going to fix it and you're going to have a working system. Does that answer your question?
I guess I would have rather seen something downgraded where instead of a web browser, it was a camera hardwired into something where we didn't have all the nonsense with it, where it was just...
Yeah. And that's exactly right. In the old world, you had an analog camera that had coax plugged into it, and it was plugged into the back of a DVR. And then you're getting about 1 to 2 frames per second there.
That's where we gain all the video. I understand that.
Yeah, and now in the new world, you're getting 15 times better images per second. And unfortunately, with that comes the technology of they're all computers. I mean, even the cameras are computers, and they have to be, I would say at least every 5 years, they have to have a technology refresh. But the images that you get and the clarity is unbelievable compared to the old gas station videos. What I wanted to do now is have Brian actually help me here. And I will, as we go through these 10 cameras, we maybe talk about the specific ones, and then I'll pull the view up that you would see from them, if that would help.
So one of the areas that we're deficient in, like a little better a view, are the exterior cameras that would be, you know, primarily on the east side where we have activity. Like, for example, today, we had a gentleman that was loitering outside, and he was asking questions about when we were going to bring an inmate across. We couldn't see that from the screening station. It was Chief that actually saw what was going on. So we would kind of like to know what's going on outside, particularly on court date. So this would be an exterior. Is this a 180?
This is not the 180. It's the fixed. And
okay.
I'll show. I actually have two of them, and they're about the same price. So Brian wanted to try to get a 180 on the building, and we can do that. With that, you give up a little bit of clarity, specifically at night. But I wanted to at least show the two views. So that would be what I would call a fixed, kind of what your eyes see. It's a 3 to 9 millimeter lens. Think of 3 millimeters as what your eyes see, which is about 100 degrees, 120 degrees in there. And then the next one is the 180. It should be that one.
Then you had a night view. Did I see that?
This is the 180 at night.
One of the other views that we had asked about was 360. If when he shows it to you, it's going to give you the fisheye view, which is kind of unique. That would not be much use to us at all.
Yeah,
but,
I'm sorry, Brian. Go ahead.
But he can show you what we do with a 180 here.
That's the other thing. The software allows you to do this. You can take a 360 camera and make it be like four cameras. This is that same cafeteria. And let me see if I can... So it's what we thought we would use it as. It's every floor hallway, correct?
Yes. Yeah. We could put that in the center corridor of the floors and give us a view. And I think you had seen, Myron had come up to the screening station and saw how things worked up there. And then I took the time to show him around where areas we can see and areas that we can't see. And so in the central corridors, like just off DMV, we would be able to see all four directions from there instead of just that one portion of that central corridor.
The camera here, it's not something the human eye really likes to look at. Like the screening station person won't want to look at that. What it's good for is going back after the fact if there's any issues, because it records 360. And then you can take that basically one camera will do four views. So this is three quadrants with one overall look. I think there's only two of those proposed, or is there?
In our with the 30 cameras, we wanted four, one in each on each floor in that central corridor. As far as priority time wise, and we'll discuss this here in a little bit. The one that we find critical is the one on the first floor, so we're getting a view, especially when DMV is available or is working, that we're able to watch that whole area. I think the others that we had talked about were the ones that, like we have today. The only other one we would love to make available, especially to DMV, would be a camera that is audio capable, and we discussed that a little bit the last time. This would be activated when the personnel hit the panic button. How much of this we want to discuss at this point?
General capabilities. I don't think it is.
Generally, if they push the button, it would activate the camera, video, and audio. And so when we're at the screening station or we're monitoring that, if we all of a sudden see the image of the customer area of the treasurer's office, we know they're having an issue right now that we need to go address. And in fact, right after the board meeting, we had that at the treasurer's office where they had an irate customer who was yelling at their staff using the F word. And they came upstairs and told us after he had left, you know, they almost pushed the panic button. But if they would feel comfortable of pushing that panic button, then we know we need to go to that area. And we talked about this as far as the, you know, some elected officials may want that, some may not. You know, we'll just make that available to them. If they want it, then that's fine. They had an incident at the assessor's office, too, that you can talk to them about. We could also make that available at DMV where they could push a button and we know that there's something going on at DMV. Actually, I think that's pretty awesome. So... Are there any other views that we haven't looked at?
The only thing I wanted to show was the aesthetics. The fixed camera will look like that outside. It's got it's IR, so it will see at night. And the proposal is to put one on each side of the building, and then so north, south, east, west, and then another one at the northeast.
Northeast corner.
Corner where you load and unload inmates.
Yes.
How high up do you mount them?
They're mounted high enough so that no one will mess with them, but low enough so that we can service them with a 20-foot ladder.
Okay. That's my main concern.
Outside in the sun, like you put a pair of sunglasses on that camera, and that can
show. Yeah, that's one of the reasons we kind of like the fixed camera is this one here, because it has a sun shield on it. And it also has what's called wide dynamic range. If it hits a blast of sun on the, like, well, east, west, or south hits it, it will kind of see through the sun. And that's new. That's a new technology now with IP. And then the other one that if you wanted a 180 outside, So this is the one I would probably recommend more. I call it a bullet camera, this one here, for outside. But this is the other one that if you did want a 180 view, you could do that. You'd really have to, you know, wall mount it so it'd face out. It doesn't have the shield. It does have wide dynamic range, but it's going to be hit more with sun than that other one where you can point down a little bit more on.
So it wouldn't be mounted, like it would be turned on its side as we would look to that.
Yeah, I'd call it like a wall mount.
Okay.
When I approached Phil about this, when we came up with the 30 cameras, that was a walk around that was done. I know Mr. Tiemann and Mr. Hill had walked around with us one day and showed them what we can see, what we can't see. Mr. Dorn had done the same. So we looked at that 30 and we're going, 30 more cameras. And then when you find out what you can see and can't see, it makes sense. And Phil did an excellent job of going around and also seeing that same thing. If we're needing to see those areas, we're needing to see those areas. So we're still up to the 30 cameras. But after a discussion with the sheriff, if we need to, you know, work on this year, work on it the next year till we're finally up to that goal, well, let's get started, you know. Let's take a bite off of the piece of the elephant. So these are the 10 that sitting there I know are critical. Some are very critical so that we can get at least started on this whole process. So I asked him to build a system or design a system that would handle not only just the 10 but up to that 30 as we work toward that goal. So
one big question I would have is, what's the lifespan on this equipment? We're really deficient in our server, it seems, right now, or if not the server, the client computer upstairs.
Yeah.
What kind of lifespan are we looking at on those?
The average life of a computer is probably about 5 to 7 years.
So on this equipment here, we're looking at about the addition about $10,000 a year amortization then?
The server that you have today is operating pretty well. However, you're wanting to add so many cameras, and that's why we're wanting to. If you didn't add any cameras, which is probably not practical, it would last longer than that. But because it's an electronic component, that's just the lifespan of them.
Second page of this proposal there, the server, the client PC, and the switches. This server is going to replace the server we have now. And basically because we added the screening station, we're finding out that we don't have enough capacity. So this is basically an upgrade. The equipment on that page is an upgrade, or it's to get us to the point where we can do the screening station and any additional cameras that we want.
That's correct.
If we did nothing today and didn't have the screening station, then our server, what you just said, is basically doing the job. But we're almost at the end of our useful life on that server because we've been over 5 years since this was installed. So we're looking sometime in the future, replacing it or upgrading it, probably anyway, to continue with the original stuff. But since we started adding stuff, then that brings the cost up.
And just for long over here, the front page of proposals basically for the cameras and installing those and stuff, and that's around 18,000. The county server, the client PC, and the switches that would upgrade our server, the client PC up at the screening station, is around 16,000. And these are estimates of proposals. The milestone 3-year opt-in software upgrade plan is another 8,500. And then because, I think as Dave has talked, because of our courthouse, it has a little bit extra cost, as he mentioned also, Phil mentioned, our courthouse to run the wires and stuff. I mean, it's going to cost something to run the wires anyway, but our courthouse probably has a little bit more of a cost because of the design, which is just the building. That's around $4,400.
And I'd ask Dave a question. Does our electrician have the ability to do this?
They have done cabling in the past, yes. Yeah.
So when we get further along making estimate, maybe we need to get an estimate from one of our local electricians or a couple of them so that we see what their figures are.
Mm-hmm. On that last page, the wiring and so on.
Right.
That, yeah. Mm-hmm. The wiring was almost $800 in there, so that we're going to need anyway. You know, $727, but the rest of that, yeah, those are things to look at too. Terry Baxter, would you like to comment anything since you're here and stuff? Or?
I guess I can answer some questions if anybody has any security. I know you've been addressing this for some time. I commend you for doing that. Courthouses across the state of Nebraska are looking into this, a variety of them up there, putting in the system, as long as it, you know, covers all your areas that you need to have it, the vital area covered. You've got people here who identify that area. And one thing we look at, I guess, on an IRMA standpoint is the retention of the records of what's out there. Sometimes we see a little bit too small, and then we review incidents that happen, but we don't get them recorded, we don't get them covered. And of course, down the road, something's filed against the county, and the first thing when we ask for a copy of a video, it's we don't have it. And I know if you get too far, out, then you got to start storing things on clouds. And there's cybersecurity issues. You want to make sure that all the security relates to cloud coverage, so we don't have access to that. I commend you guys for looking at this. I really do. Unfortunately, it's the way of the world. You've seen it going around the United States. Things are changing, and it's going more towards a secure environment. So, yes.
From the NIRMA's insurance perspective, what's your recommendation as far as retaining video?
We like to see at least a minimum of 30 days. The problem what we see a lot of times is records don't get recovered like they should. And especially if you have a major event that kind of goes down, some things get forgotten. We like to see at least a minimum. I think a minimum of 30 days. I think when you get above that, and correct me if I'm wrong, I think that you got to have some type of storage beyond that. And I'm not quite sure the IT portions of everything that kind of goes into it, but that's kind of what we look at.
Yeah, the major events obviously will dub it immediately, but, you know, it's the slip and falls that happened and the steps going down the west side that Davey doesn't know nothing about because nobody reported, and then a few days later or a week later, all of a sudden we got somebody calling us, an attorney.
And I can tell you, you know, there's been successful claims that's been handled because of the video, and that's been able to be a big portion of it. But it covers a lot of aspects of your liability. So. Anything else for me? Thank you.
What kind of savings can we expect by increasing?
I didn't say that, Terry. You said that.
That's not my pay grade. Normally what they have is, your claims, I think your premium and stuff is based on claims that you have. So the less claims that you have, the better portion that things kind of roll that way. So, and a lot of this stuff, it develops. I mean, you know, the recordings make a determination a lot of times from our investigation where we do have
an exposure there, or we don't, and the investigations go into it, and the attorneys and all that stuff. But I can tell you that's where your claims are, I mean, your premiums are based on. So,
yeah, and I sometimes wonder how the other counties, if they're having the issues we have, not issues we have, but for some reason our county, we seem to be able to attract getting sued. I mean, we, not just one or two, we have, you know, quite often we have those.
Well, events happen. I mean, and they happen a lot. But I can't tell you related to the security issue. One thing that I do is do courthouse security assessments, and I've been we do a lot of frequent of those. A lot of counties are looking into it, and so matter of fact, I've got a couple more scheduled. So, thank you.
Is there anything that we need to post, Roger, as far as if we would need something for court records that people are being taped all the time? So, or is that just fair game on public property?
Again, I mean, obviously, we've let people know we got cameras in here. You'll see when you go in, like on parking lots, which is viewed more often as a, that's really not, you know, when I get in my car and light up my cigarette or whatever, they put camera or notices up. You're being filmed. They know the parking lot out, the school, Walmart does. And again, you come into a public building. Nowadays, if you don't think you're being watched, you've been living in a cave. But I'm not aware of anything right now that requires, although, you know, gosh, I don't want any more signs coming into this building. We have to start selling billboards. I mean, it's, again, you walk in, you see a camera immediately when you walk in. But I can check that. I would assume you guys would have told, left us a little sign that says you got to post this if there was a state law requiring it. I'm not aware of that.
I'm not an attorney, but all I've heard, just with audio, one party has to acknowledge that they're being recorded, and that one party is the owner. So, but with video, no. It's assumed, like you said, that pretty much I kind of feel like wherever you go, you're being recorded anyway because of people's data phones. Anyone can record at any time, anywhere.
Yeah, if you don't believe that, just watch the morning news or whatever, because yeah, they'll have something just about every day where somebody was out there with their phone and recording stuff.
I do feel that cameras are a major deterrent. I think that if someone's going to do something bad, it helps. And I think having cameras outside help. There's, you know, it's a good thing to harden your target. It's not always going to stop someone. There's no guarantee, of course, but hardening the target and having them go on down the road to a less hardened target is one of your goals.
Thank you. We'll revisit this at our next committee meeting again and bring it up again and have some more discussion. Or, Doug, if you have another comment, go ahead.
Just one thing that we had talked about, the 30 cameras, of course, so I think it's important that we, whatever conclusion that we come up with in the end here, that we have a plan, I guess, is where I would like to see us go. So if the decision is, and the reason why we have these top 10, if you want to call it this, and that's what's in this quote, is that we look to where we want to go with this, I guess, that, and then we have a couple of things we should probably at least have in the back of our minds for discussion or consideration is, do we want to build this system to get to that 30 some additional cameras? If we decide, well, okay, we go with 10 and the server and client PCs and things of that nature, then maybe next year we add 10, and then the next year 10, so we can have maybe like a 3-year plan or something that we look into, you know, similar to what, you know, maybe Road and Bridges would do, or, you know, something that we can kind of budget accordingly or look to. I think that's important. The other side of it is, and this is something maybe for Phil to answer, is if we build the system and so the total number ends up being whatever it is for our server, that we don't
limit ourselves then, like, oh, it's full, now we've got the system, you know, done, now we can't add one camera, you know, that we have that room for expansion into this for down the road. That is an issue that we have faced over there, and we have broken it up into three different servers, actually, so we can prioritize cameras. In the event that one server goes down, we can simply plug and play into there to keep our main priority cameras going. Then, of course, it brings a question up that for consideration with the amount of cabling. Do we plan in advance then, and while they're running cable, you know, run those cables or that Cat 6 to those designated areas for future cameras, so that's already in place. So then the next time when they come in, we don't have to do it a second and a third time possibly. And all you have to do is just install the cameras, plug them in, mount them, and they're done. So I think that's important to talk about or to consider so that we can maybe have this broke down over a three-year plan or something along those lines with we do with maybe upgrade the server and the equipment now and those down, and then next year add those other areas. So that's what I would just throw out there for thought. So.
Well, and I think that's a very good suggestion, but I think we look at the risk of our employees all the way through this courthouse, and who are you going to say has less risk now and we can wait till next year and the next person to the next year and the next person to the next year. I think if at all possible, even if we need to use inheritance funds or something finance-wise, we try to do the entire project at once.
I would absolutely agree. That is, of course, our first preference. We're just trying to maybe make this easier to swallow, so to speak, a little bit. And if we can do it either way, we would be happy. But if we could do the majority of it up front, that would be our preference. So,
you know, last time when we went to the executive session, you proposed this, and unfortunately, we were short a couple members, and this brought it so that everybody here this morning could see this, and now we can have a couple weeks to.
Yeah, and we talked a little bit about the elected officials and their offices, and, you know, I think you need to either have it one way or the other. You know, unfortunately, every 4 years there's that potential. One elected official may or may not want it, so we probably need to make a decision or at least have that discussion that if we install them a different location so we keep everybody happy, or, you know, what the best compromise might be so we don't take cameras in and out of offices and things of that nature either, because I don't think that's very practical. So something to consider.
Thank you guys very much.
Thank you.
Thank you, Phil, for coming down.
Thank you.
I also invite anyone who hasn't seen the cameras or monitors to come on up, and I would love to show you, and so you have a first-hand view.
Thank you. Any more questions from anybody? Comments? Thank you. Next up, approve or disapprove excluding FOP members from the new time and attendance program pending future negotiations.
Move to approve.
Second.
Motion by Bauman, seconded by Lytle to approve. Where this came about, Matt, you want to explain it?
I'll just say the FOP sent a letter over and said they didn't want to be part of the new time clock system. We have a number yet to approve for payroll today. Okay, so we're going to exclude them because the CAR does not grant management rights to the sheriff, which is we're interpreting based on this last ruling for the CAR, which we can talk about next. And so anything that they say they don't want to do, we have to sit down and negotiate, even if it's not in the contract that they agreed to. So it complicates the process. It backs up the entire county's payroll when they don't want to do that. This will continue to keep them on the old system, and our intent is to sit down and have a discussion to find out how we can come to a compromise or move to a new system. And so I just say that we need to do this based on CIR's ruling, even though it's not in the agreement. And I view it as I continue to think the sheriff has elected rights put in there in state statute. And I think the CIR is interpreting his lack of management rights wrong. We do not run that office. The sheriff does. But now we are going to be drug in to run that office. I think it's appropriate that we approve excluding them because that's the process now that has been laid out. So we need to sit down and visit with them, but we've got to exclude them from that process. But there are inherent difficulties, which we're seeing this morning, by having them do something different.
Go ahead, Terry. As Doug mentioned earlier, as far as the camera systems, it's either all or nothing. Why is this any different? Camera systems in the courthouse, we're just talking about. Why is this any different?
Because of the FOP. Is that right? The union says we do what we want. You guys are stuck with it. That's what I keep seeing.
That's what the CIR said.
CIR ruling with the vehicle take-home ruled that we did not negotiate that, as that was not part of that negotiated contract. The FOP has sent a letter, and because their view is that, because we have not negotiated this, we also cannot implement this. Because of the CIR ruling, that's why we are going forward and doing this and excluding them from that right now, pending us having the opportunity to get together with them and negotiating that.
So there's one department out of the entire county who we have to sit down and waste an enormous amount of everyone's time, enormous amount of taxpayers' money, to renegotiate everything that comes up instead of saying, hey, we're working together. Let's deal with this and make something that works for all of us. We've got one group that says, no, we're not gonna just come in and work with you, do what everyone else is. I mean, we're working together as a county, and we have one group that's pushing themselves further and further outside of that. And, I mean, people aren't happy about it. That hurts morale, the rest of the county. That takes away from the respect of that group with the citizens of the county. But there's nothing we can do because that's what the CIR says.
We could appeal the CIR ruling. There again, you appeal it to a higher up or whatever, court. But there again, you're looking at cost and all that other stuff.
How much money did we just spend court?
We'll talk about that next.
Gary?
I guess the one thing going back to CIR ruling is the one problem is that we didn't negotiate when Gus did the proposed car change, and CIR made a ruling that said you have to negotiate. And this time we're not going to charge you with attorney's fees from the other side because this is a first-time occurrence. Next time, if we haven't negotiated in good faith ahead of making changes, who's to say? We might end up paying for attorney fees on the other side. So it's a deal where we have, at this point, they've laid out this is the rules that we got to live by, and unfortunately, it is what we got to do.
The next item up there is we're going to discuss the CRR ruling, but this is we need to take a formal action.
How long is this contract that we're under now? I can't remember.
Until 2017.
What?
2017.
July of 2017.
We received notification of the FOP's desire to not be part of the time clock after the CIR ruling, and we've talked about time clocks for about 6 months. That's just factual timeline.
Okay. So that's my motion.
Myron, so if Galen comes to me tomorrow and says it's too inconvenient for me, for my outside men to have a time clock and do this and stuff, you know, we don't want to be part of this either.
They're not union.
They're not union.
I realize that.
Right. And because
I'm just giving everybody a good example here.
I'm not arguing with you.
All right.
No.
22,500 people, roughly, that are citizens of Gage County, whose tax money we spend. That is our revenue as a public body. There's an article, again, the Journal Star, keeping track, good record. To do things in a concise manner as a public body, and there's interference to do so. So we have to slow down and go through the process, the arduous process of trying to be efficient with taxpayer money. And I say we keep doing it because it's the right thing to do. Regardless of the interference, it's still the right thing to do.
But this is what we need to approve so that we can go forward and negotiate with them.
Yes. Because we need to
negotiate that part of the contract.
And I would just note for the record that that's on advice of your council, your labor council, and
yes,
I would strongly encourage you to heed Mr. Pigley's advice
this
in this situation. And again, I'm
Matt Gary, I guess, met with Jerry Pigsley, I don't even remember what day anymore, after the CIR ruling, and on his advice, this is something that we need to approve and then get a hold of them and have a discussion on the time clock part of that agreement.
And I think you can, you're concerned, Terry's concerned about being the only department that's excluded. That comes to play then, based on the CIR, and you guys are a law-abiding body, you'll do that. Negotiate in good faith, and maybe they'll come to the table and get it worked out. I'll stop there.
I just got to say this, just so you're aware, as to where your motion is on here.
So understand that it says FOP members, okay?
Right.
You are not, in this motion, just talking about road deputies when you say that. You're also talking about all the corrections officers because they are also the FOP members. Currently, all the corrections officers use time clock. They always
change. Whatever they were currently doing, that will continue until we have negotiations.
They're not the ones.
They didn't bring this up, did they?
Okay. And maybe I'm understanding it wrong, but it says exclude FOP members, so that's what I'm trying to bring up.
From the new time and attendance, whatever currently,
okay,
when the contract went in place,
right,
even though it wasn't negotiated, whatever they currently are doing, and I talked to you Monday about this,
right,
whatever currently is taking place, yeah, over there continues.
Right,
okay?
Right. And I get what you're saying.
Time clock, the jail people,
right,
security, if they're doing time clock, they continue doing time clock.
Correct.
This is from the new time and attendance program.
Right. So they were on an old time clock. I mean, that's where I'm trying to clarify.
That's what they continue on.
But they don't use it anymore, Myron.
Because it crapped out and we replaced it with
the new one. We got a new
one,
so we have the new system. So they really just went from using this machine, which was the old one.
We replaced the machine.
We got the new one for everybody. Now they use this one. So that's all I'm trying to clarify for you, so you guys know, I mean, how it is right now. So
how do the road deputies keep time card now? Does their supervisor keep their time, or do they keep their own time
currently
card?
Because I review just yesterday, Monday, I'm sorry, every other Monday, I guess it is. So we go through those timesheets. So historically, it's changed multiple times throughout the years. But essentially what it amounts to is that they do a paper timesheet. So it's they're on a 28-day pay period. Some people are on a two-week pay period. So they'll have a timesheet that'll either reflect the 28-day or the two-week, okay? So they basically put the beginning of their shift, the end of their shift. If some have lunch hours, because road deputies their lunches are paid, okay? So their full shift, it might be 12 hours. If they have any overtime, then it's all figured on a timesheet and then goes through to the end, and they use an Excel program to do that. And so then the hours are all totaled up, and then they're reviewed by their supervisor, and then any overtime slips that they might have, or vacation, sick leave, other time off requests, that's a separate piece of paper. So if it's anything beyond their normal shift, or if they don't work a certain portion for a benefit, then they turn in a slip. That's approved by the supervisor. Then I look it over, and I sign it, and then at the end of the day, so to speak, then when Julie has gone through and probably corrected majority of them, then they go to the sheriff. He's the elected official. He signs off on them. Then she will generally scan over the stuff to the clerk's office, and then those will come over here, and then they match that now with the time clock. And, of course, you know, we're having those correction slips because if one guy clocks in at or calls in on the radio at 6 a.m., he gets here at 6:25 or might get a call, might be 7-something before he clocks in, you know, then we have that slip, and then that goes with that, and then they match the two up and compare them and the difference. So that's currently, I mean, correct me if I'm wrong, but that's, I just did a timesheet for every person that we had over there, and everybody is either doing the timesheet and the clock, is my understanding, or, you know, there's a couple, you know, that are just, that don't apply to any of this, that are just doing regular timesheets.
Well, almost all that would go away with the time card. We're with the time clock.
No,
so we
it
go
wouldn't.
From all that to
You would eliminate one piece of, you would eliminate the paper time sheet, is my understanding, by doing.
And all the reviews and everything on that.
Well, that's
not
a good,
all the review, but.
You still have to have those slips, you know, so if they use a benefit hour, we have to know that so we can track that or subtract their vacation, or if they use sick leave, we still have to have that to match that up.
Matt, you have some comments?
Convoluted mess. Try to improve an old system, and it's a convoluted mess. It's a waste of time to have those people do that. We've offered to pay for the cell phone so that they can get in and do it remotely immediately. It's a convoluted system, and I understand the process of going through the negotiating of something they don't want to do, and we're going to do that. But we've talked about this for months. It's a better system. Again, it's a better accountability of taxpayer money that the auditor is going to look at. And we're going to be responsible for that. And, you know, Gus isn't here, unless, you know, so you're here. He is now responsible, because I don't think that we should be responsible for a system that we're not necessarily endorsing. I'm going to be very clear. That goes all on them. If something happens, if a credit card thing comes up again, we've got a history of some, you know, over in that department, it's old stuff, and I hate to bring that old stuff up, but when people start to do things independent, and I hate to say the word rogue, but I just said it, it's outside of the normal process, and we're not trying to be punitive. We want to pay people correctly. We want to keep a good record. We want to be a steward of taxpayers' dollars, and we're getting interference. We're going to sit down and negotiate. That's exactly what we're going to do. But there's a process in place here that we want everyone to be a part of, so it's a more streamlined system, because it took you 3 minutes to explain that entire process.
And again, I haven't hit it all yet.
Yeah, and I go back to the conversation about the communications. I'm not so sure that doesn't happen when they're purely on magic. Just ridiculous to say, but
It does appear that way.
And
a
we
lot.
Still don't have – payroll is due by Monday. We still don't have a number yet, and we can't pay all the county employees.
It's crazy. It just came up yesterday that Julie was on the phone with the clerk's office trying to figure this out. I mean, this is crazy, and I don't really understand it. But so, if I understand this right, and help me out here. So we'll say, for example, we have this magic we call 7 minute window before and after. Okay, so if an individual clocks in within that 7 minute window prior to their start time, and we're going to go at the top of the hour to simplify this. All right. So if they start at 8 o'clock, if they clock in within that 7 minute window before, we're good. We don't pay them overtime. If they clock in, clock out within that 7 minute window after their end time, we'll say 5 o'clock, we don't have to pay them overtime. All right. Here's a problem that we discovered yesterday, or Julie did, and she discussed it with me, and, you know, we're like, let's wait till Wednesday. I'm not going to even talk about it right now. So if they clock in at 7 minutes and 31 seconds after, or before or after.
7:52.
Right. Then now it automatically kicks it to a quarter hour of overtime. Okay. So another example might be if they go to lunch, let's say 12 o'clock, that's a magic number, but it doesn't really work that way in reality. We all know that. You might be busy on something or a call or a phone call, or then let's say you clock out at 12:08, it automatically kicks it to 12:15. So, you know, it doesn't say seconds on that clock. So if they clock back in now at 12:08, now they've incurred, it's either 15 or 30 minutes of overtime. By the way, the clock figures it, and I asked Julie, I said, well, isn't that just programming? Shouldn't this keep track of every minute and every second they're working? I mean, in theory, if I clock in at 12:01 and I clock out at 12:03, that should be 2 minutes extra. So then do we pay them that overtime? You know, I mean, it brings up all those questions that we have to figure out, and that's part of this process, I'm sure, of getting through this, whether it's a programming issue or settings or something along those nature or those lines, then it might just be the way it is set up that way. I don't know. But.
And I think you're right. I think it can be set to exact limit.
I talked to Phil yesterday, and I think that's probably
really unworkable. You'll still have to have parameters when they can go to work and when they're gone. And
We'll always face the issues like, for example, yesterday we had a guy that was gone somewhere to pick up evidence, and so he couldn't clock out over his lunch hour. He just drove straight back. So, you know, got his stuff done and had to get to the lab and things of that nature. So, So he'll have to do a slip then, that he wasn't here, you know, to clock out for lunch or back in for lunch. So we're going to have that. I don't want to say every day, but it's probably going to be weekly, multiple times for sure, that we're always going to have that if that's the route we stay with, you know, doing it that way. So there will be those things, I think, that over a period of time we'll be able to figure out and streamline and make it better. But right now this is the issue in our face, and so we have to try and come up with a quick answer.
Just two quick comments. This system that we're looking at now, I've explained that to my boss in Lincoln. We're actually looking at trying to integrate aspects of this because it's such a better system. And we have an electronic system, and we're looking at a better system. So here the private sector is learning something from the public sector. It's a better system. So we're looking at that. The other thing is, we've talked a lot here, and I know I have as well. My comments regarding the time clock have nothing to do with the deputy's job performance with regard to how they're serving the public. This is purely an employee issue and the administrative things that we need to do as a board. So it's my comments and frustrations aren't related to their performance as officers, and I know that that's been taken the opposite way, and be very clear on that.
Right.
This has to do with our job as a county board and keeping good record and paying people appropriately. And I just want to say that because we've talked a lot about things, and it's not us versus them and their duty, or me personally, but it is about the process of good record keeping.
The challenges are, I would say, purely logistical from our standpoint over there. I mean, that's the things we have to try and figure out. So,
we'll negotiate that. But
right, yeah, some background.
Really, is not that severe of an issue. I mean,
Myron, you might just note, have the clerk note for the record that the detention employees will continue to use the same system they have been prior to this date.
FOP members will,
right?
Not just the detention employees, but the FOP members will continue to use the same clock system or timesheets or whatever that they previously or have been previously using. Yes.
Since the old system is no longer there, they'll use the new system because that's their time clock. Is that what you're saying?
No. What do you mean, new system?
The old system is gone.
The detention center.
All we did was replace a time clock. The time clock was broke. Okay. We replaced the time clock.
But it's the new system.
That's where that gets a little messy, I think.
Yeah. So it's, you know, you would think that the administrator over there, who's the sheriff, would have the ability to do that, but apparently it falls on.
I am not a lawyer on that one.
I don't know if a lawyer can.
I don't know if a lawyer can figure that out.
And the time clock before was just would print them out, stamp on
the time clock before, a card that they stuck in. And
it's a different animal, but it's essentially the same. I mean, it's a digital fingerprint time clock. That's what the corrections officers know.
Before.
We've actually had two of those. Replaced it over a year. They've used it for years.
You've had that. I think Gus had for probably 20 years that you've had something similar to that.
Yeah, I don't know if it's 20, but for a great number of years. They did that just to simplify it for our records management. And so that was just for corrections officers. They used that fingerprint one. Worked great. It figured it to the minute. You know, it was simple. And so when that one went bad, we got another one. And so they've used that for years, and now it went away. And so then they, instead of using that one now, they're just using the new system that everybody uses in the county, so to speak, for clarification.
Well, they can use the new one, still record their time, but they won't be kept track of it on the new system. Does that make any sense to you? You know what I mean?
They'll be kept track of on the new system also.
Yes.
No, just some of them.
No, they can still clock in and out with that.
Yeah.
But the problem is, before, when they did their fingerprint, they were able to print out.
Julie Slavin, our administrative assistant, she would just, every 2 weeks or every 28, however they're set up, you know, she would just run a report, print off their time. It gave the total number of hours, you know, and then they would have slips in between.
But I don't know if she'll have access to do that. Now we'll have to print off the report.
Print it off, run it over to them, and then they'll still have their paper sheet in that way. Yeah.
I forgot again. How many departments are having trouble with this in the county right now?
More.
Is it just
one?
I'm aggravated with that. I mean,
are, yeah, some of them, it is, and just to let people know, some of them, it has worked pretty good. Some of them, you know, I mean, it's not, the thing isn't.
For an 8-to-5 person, it works. I mean, I won't say perfect.
But like I said
it
before,
works great.
The system,
finding issues.
The system was telling us this last pay period that I should get paid for 15 minutes yeah. that I wouldn't have claimed if I was keeping my own timesheet.
Right, right.
But and that's by the handbook. So that's a current policy with this right. board and the employees. Okay, so that's not changed. If we want to go to something like what we've been talking about, mm-hmm. and I think that's simpler to understand because when my employee says, I took an hour, and now I'm, you know, going, but it cost me an hour and a half because of when you checked in and out. Now, for one time period, okay, not a big deal, but at the end of the year, and I got to come to you folks and say, okay, I overshot my budget because I wasn't paying attention.
That's a hiccup.
And I'm a silly trusting soul, but I only got three people that
that's
I got
to watch.
That's
a hiccup, though. I mean, that's an easy fix. That's just...
Well, but that's something we can discuss. Yeah. And then the elected officials, we're going to present something to the board. And we talked to Don about doing that. Are we going to go to just strictly minute by minute and not the second thing and all that stuff? We need to talk about that because we haven't
really
done that.
You're going to really overrun your budget then.
Yeah. Well... But it is taxpayer money, so
Start time is 8 o'clock, and that's the time they go to work. It doesn't matter if they clock in 7 minutes
right.
early.
That's great.
But if you go by the minute, you're going to start paying them at 7 till.
Well, and that's something I think we talk about, because there's pros and cons. I mean, when I talked to Don yesterday, it was kind of like, well, yeah, but there's this point, which I hadn't thought about. Okay, so we'll get together and make a proposal. You guys will make a decision, and we'll go.
Which is why for months we've wanted people to use it to shake these bugs out, and instead there's been resistance. And so now here we sit trying to go live, and now we're finding these things out. We knew there were going to be things that were going to be different. Use it. Let's shake these out.
Right.
instead of just getting on the horse and riding it, everybody wants to.
I got my first report yesterday morning, and I had to ask for it. And I'm only saying that.
Right.
And I'm not blaming anybody because I didn't go down and say I need to see that.
Right. And that's the feedback that the group needs.
Well, eventually, hopefully, you'll have it Monday morning.
Well, and that's why I said we're working through a couple pay periods and let's see. Maybe we don't want that 15-minute. Obviously, it's been around there for a long time. When I was 16, working at a grocery store, we all sat there and we'd watch that, clock.
Yep.
And when you did that, the boss let you clean bathrooms for a while.
How long ago was you 16?
Yeah.
But in other words, we should be able to go to this at this time.
Well, I wonder why they picked 15. But what Dawn said, it was she can set it up on 5 minutes or whatever you want. Yeah. As far as, but we'll have to adjust our handbook to reflect what we're doing if we change.
And I don't know if you can set it to say anything before 7:53. Is not, you can't clock in till a certain time.
Yeah, you can tell if they're technically Department of Labor stuff. If they're sitting there at the desk working, if they're sitting at the desk, you got a problem with Department of Labor. Because if the phone rings, they pick it up, they're working.
Yep. That doesn't happen until after 8.
Again, I'm just going to read here in this article. Auditors blame the village board for insufficient monitoring and oversight. I'm not going to be party to that. We are making an attempt, for the record. The other people want to do something rogue and on their own, you can have Auditor Jansen come talk to you.
Vote. 6-1 with Jurgens voting no. Discussion on CIR, really. Basically, the CIR ruling came down and ruled that was because that was mandatory as a mandatory negotiable item, and we did not negotiate on it. Matt could read it, but because we did not negotiate on it, they ruled in favor of the FOP.
I was there at the hearing, as was Chief Deputy and the Sheriff, and our contention was that it wasn't in It wasn't brought up during negotiations, so we didn't know that it was an issue. It was, we had considered it a management right by the language in the contract that said that it defined office equipment, and we assumed that was a car as well. County equipment, office equipment was the responsibility of the sheriff for its directed use. They said, they being the CIR, and Lauren Lindahl was the commissioner who signed this, and he apparently is the mayor of Wahoo, so another elected official. He signed the order here from the CIR. Their interpretation is that really anything that affects them that they consider a benefit to the employee has to be negotiated. Even if they don't bring it forward during the negotiations, you have to come back and open the agreement, even if you have an agreement that says, and the article in the agreement, which is referred to in slang as a zipper clause, which says if you didn't bring it forward and you didn't ask for it at the time of negotiations, you can't come back later and ask for it. Well, apparently you can do that. So the sheriff has, my interpretation of that is the sheriff has limited management rights, even laid out through state statute, that can be overridden by a ruling of the CIR, and anything that they want to bring forward, they will come to this board. The total cost of a decision that the sheriff made to threaten to pull their cars away, because actually they never lost them, they continued to take them home, the total bill that the county had to protect itself was $31,583, and that was of Monday, to ask us to reverse a decision that this board didn't make and to negotiate something that wasn't in the contract. So it kind of leaves you speechless and says, you know, we knew full well that when this contract was up, we were probably going to be negotiating cars, but we had a contract for a period of time. And I guess I still think that it's the sheriff's responsibility to manage that department, but the interpretation of the CIR is that really it's this board that is responsible for managing the sheriff's department. If the sheriff ever has a decision made over there that the FOP doesn't agree with. And that's how I'm trying to rewire myself, because apparently that's how I interpret this, is that we should have negotiated that. We had to reverse a decision that we didn't make, which it's hard to do. How do you not jump off a building you didn't jump off of in the first place? So that's why we had to go back when they, after the CIR ruling, they said, well, they didn't want to do time clocks, which is why we have to go through and do that, because we don't want to hang the taxpayers for an additional almost $32,000, plus potentially be interpreted that we weren't negotiating in good faith and then be hung with their bill as well. So we're really forced to do this, and it was a decision the sheriff made. So I've told Gus that 31-5 was really on the, and I say threat, but because it never took place. He rescinded the decision to do that, but even in doing that, the FOP didn't pull out a CIR. They went ahead and went through with it. So yeah. That's where we're at.
And that's my only reason for voting yes on the prior resolution to exclude them, is to avoid that type of bill that we would be facing. I mean, we need to go towards a time clock and that's accurate and reflects people's actual time. And
yeah,
I guess we'll negotiate with them.
I agree with John completely. I mean, that's the only reason I would vote to exclude them, because the time clock is what needs to be done. But our hands are tied.
Here's the problem, though. You have public employees that are in a union. Now the public employees, the FOP, have held the people that allocate the tax dollars at their will, cost a big bill to a lawyer now that we've wasted. It's just money thrown away. No benefit from it whatsoever. Nothing was ever taken from them. It's county equipment. Gus is supposed to run his department how he wants to run it. Instead, he can't. This would be like Galen saying, well, I don't want that motor grader running over there. You know, that's a wasted trip there. Well, I'd like to, so I'm going to do that. Tell me I can't, because I did that before. I understand where it came from, but it really makes me mad. And this drives that wedge more and more between different groups here, different parts of the county where we're all supposed to be working together and that's not happening whatsoever on stuff like this. And I'm sure it makes it hard over there, too. Across the street, I'm sure it doesn't make it easy. I'm assuming that there are different groups that are upset on different sides, and it's bad management. I mean, this has put us into a position where I don't see Gus having an easy time managing the people that he's supposed to manage, because he's at the will of a group, of an outside group, I guess. And then we have the CIR, which, if anyone ever wants my opinion on how the CIR works, from what I understand it, I'll be happy to talk about it. But these are public dollars. It's not all about me. It's about doing what's best for the public. I haven't heard anything yet. I want to have some type of write-up. Just out of curiosity here, we know we have a $31,000 bill here. I'd like to see what it could have potentially saved the county taxpayers if we didn't drive cars home. At least we throw it on the table, or certain people. What's that cost? It's not just gasoline. It's not just labor. It's tires. It's wear and tear. It's replacement costs of those vehicles. I mean, $31,000 is a drop in the bucket compared to what that actually does cost. Now, if that's negotiated in as a benefit later on, which evidently it was inadvertently done without anyone knowing it, I mean, there's a huge expense there.
See, that's the flip side of the coin, though. As the negotiations go to play, that comes in. Your analysis there as far as calculation. So I foresee your negotiations are going to be much longer. Your contracts are going to be much longer, because you're going to cover every blinking thing that can possibly come up in the next term of that contract. And that is extremely difficult. And because now you have to go back and talk about one thing, and your leverage in negotiating is all about a package requiring compromise on both sides. Give up a little here and I'll get something there. That's how it works. When you go to one thing, it has a tendency to be all or nothing. And where do you go then?
That's my question. What happens if you don't reach an agreement?
Same place you were just revisiting. So,
in the private world, I know what happens. It's swift and it's taken care of. I don't understand how, when we're dealing with public dollars, I guess I do understand how it becomes so much more difficult, but
well, just as we're moving into the next budget year, we're very sensitive to the increase in property valuations and the need to continue to lower the levy to offset that expenses, and there's probably going to be those who are going to be over the till and those who are probably going to have a reduction, unless we want to go out and hang all this on the taxpayer. So you go back and look at the amount of dollars that we've put in different places recently, and we've spent a lot of money certain places. And so, you know, we can continue to roll that up or we can cut. And I think we're heading towards a cut situation here, and there's going to be departments that are going to be without or are going to have to share, unless anybody else has another idea. So just kind of, I think we have to set that mindset. We're probably going to be in a cut year. Now, I've heard some people say, oh, you got a windfall. You got all this valuation out there. Go ahead and ring up the tax bill. That's nonsense. I don't think anybody here has ever had that intent to do that. And I think we're probably going to be in a cut year. So I mean, that's my opinion. Obviously, we do this by committee, by consensus. But
okay. I don't have any more.
Did anybody get a copy of that order as well? I think, Don, if everybody wants a copy of that, it's there. It's public record. And,
did everybody get a copy of that? Don was going to forward in their email a copy of that CIR ruling that she got from Pigsley. Now, I don't know if everybody did, or if not, we'll get you on.
And it's on the CIR's website. I think you can get on there yourself, and you can look at that on CIR's website. So.
Any more discussions on the CIR ruling? If not, we
at 11:13. I need a motion to go in at 11:13 to go into closed session for discussion of personnel for the protection, needless injury to the reputation of an individual.
So moved. Second.
Motion by Bauman, seconded by Teeman. Vote. 7-0. We're going to take a 5-minute break. We're going to take a quick break here before we go in.
Doug, who's all
over at the closed session?
Oh, wait. I got to turn the recorder on.
Sorry.
Okay.
Are you ready now?
Yep.
Okay, I move at 11:56 that we come out of closed session.
Second. Motion by Lytle, seconded by Byers to come out of executive session, 11:56. Vote 5-0 with Juergens and Bauman having left.
Okay.
Okay, now. Before we, or shortly after, Michelle made a comment to me that she had something she'd like to air, and she's being a little shy, so I think Michelle should have the floor about time clock situation.
I was just going to say that, for instance, over the weekend I took some time off. I left at 1 o'clock on Friday. I was gone on Monday. I took it upon myself to make sure that I had my time sheet filled out, given to her before I left Friday, because I knew they were due Monday. You know, and I guess I don't understand how people cannot feel like they have to take responsibility for getting their own timesheet in. You know what I'm saying? I mean, if you want to get paid, you punch the thing. I guess I
absolutely agree with you. It is. There's personal responsibility here, and if you don't accept that, then I guess the results are what you get.
And knowing that I work in the office, you know, they were still going to be working. I could have waited till Tuesday probably, but
I might start doing that because that would help me.
Knowing the issues that everybody else was having, you know, you have to make a conscious decision to, to do it.
It seems like as people are hearing that there's issues with it, they're trying to decide what else issues they can bring up too.
Yes.
That's what I almost get that feeling. Instead of working to try and solve this and let's all get on the same page and get this done and get these time clocks going, it's how can I
present declaration. So
get around it. Yeah. Instead of helping each other and helping all of us together to try to do it the right way, that everybody's going to be treated fairly. And I think that's what we've always wanted.
And I think part of it may be how it was presented to you. If the person presenting it to their employees is against it, they're all going to be.
I totally agree with that. Yes, I think that was well said.
The other thing that we have is we have a short time frame from the end of the pay period to when you're paid. Short time frame from the end of your time period to when they're actually paid.
And that's one of the things Don brought up. If we moved the... We need them. Could we or should we move the actual time we pay them 1 week or whatever? That way we have a whole
credit, you know, or
they have a whole week instead of what we're running into is
2 days.
And that takes a lot of coordination between all the offices and everybody to get that in and done and entered.
Mm-hmm.
And that's what we're really finding out here too, is entered. And do we need to move that?
If we do that, you know, we're having to now, I mean, they have to have their timesheets in by 10 o'clock on Monday. But then we have to turn around, have all that entered, all the corrections done, do a printout, send those to the official to have them look them over, make sure that matches the hours the employee says they worked. They have to get them back to us. Yeah. So, you know, normally we're struggling to get it done by Tuesday to put it on the agenda anyway. Now we have all those other processes that we have to go through in order to get that number, this number, and it's just...
That puts us back to where Don wanted to be in arrears, one pay period.
Yeah.
2 weeks.
But then again, you have the issue of...
2 weeks or 1 week, I don't know.
You know, then one time you're only going to get 1 week pay.
Right, to get there.
But the money ends up the same.
The money ends up the same, but there's some employees out there that
don't
even make a paycheck to paycheck, and they're counting on that. And when you
now, the last time I was telling Myron, you know, we had the option of cashing in 40 hours of vacation pay to make up that difference. I mean, you lose your vacation, but then I mean, you're still gonna get your pay at the end. but that way if they do need that cash flow.
Roger said the elected officials are meeting too, and they're going to come up maybe with a proposal, and then we need to next at our next meeting, we need to be prepared to make some changes too to get this to what we need to do to get it to.
We need to get it done, because you think just right now what we're doing to our budget by having these two ladies standing here working overtime, as we're trying to get this
done. It's unnecessary stress, unnecessary worry.
Yeah. Huh? What do you think? Come on.
I still say
careful.
Everything
gets one
done.
You asked for, right, Dan?
I'm okay with that.
Pay requests are done, and we have a dollar amount that we can enter as record.
But, I mean, this is not carved in stone until Michelle goes through this.
We can correct it. We can correct it at the next meeting. Then, okay?
Yes.
But we need to approve the pay so that the direct deposits
so we
and
can
the other
make
thing.
Them.
So otherwise, if we don't approve this, then that all gets
we can't
put
even
off.
Do right. checks. Yeah.
So we need to approve this. We'll approve this dollar amount, and then if there's a correction, we'll approve that at
next meeting.
Okay.
You
okay.
could still make
so
a motion there where it would
you,
be correct other than one department.
An out, not an out, but it's something to come back with us also. If you have a correction, don't worry about that. Then you can come back and we can, and we will make sure that we specifically mention that in a line somewhere or something, that correction to last time's pay period.
Yeah.
Okay.
So I'm okay to go ahead and do my direct deposit?
Okay. Yes. Because any corrections, and we knew when we went into this that there will be times that we'll have to go back and correct stuff, but maybe not this magnitude, you know, or whatever.
Well, we thought about making the motion to approve everyone except one department.
Sure, be nice if we pull them out and put them on a separate pay level until we get this done.
That could be done.
So we
could
do everybody else, and we wouldn't have the hang-ups.
Who's going to pay for the extra time for going over this stuff? Myron, you know you want to say something.
Terry's not here, neither is Matt, and they sure would.
That was kind of fun.
Would it be out of line to Deanna, I get the sense that she's got something she wanted. Do you have something that would help as far as the process that you'd like to say? Or is there something about the time clock process that we're going through? That
the only thing that's going to fix this is to go back. It's the only thing.
Yeah. Well, I think it's going to fix it is to
go in arrears another week.
Go in arrears a week.
Yeah.
Because, not just 2 weeks,
time.
One week.
When you get,
I see.
When you tell people that their timesheet and all corrections are due by 10 o'clock on Monday morning, and on Tuesday night at 4:45, you get your last timesheet, how am I supposed to have a total to you?
Right.
After
because we hadn't even at that point entered any hours.
So how do you get a share? How do you get something?
Well, and
how?
Because they're not doing the time clocks, they had to go back to the old system and manually enter everything.
Because I'm saying, why can't we do it? We could technically do that week. I have no problem with that.
And
the one problem I see, though, the one problem I do see is that you're still going to have that person or that division that's going to push that envelope.
At 10 o'clock.
And you're going to say it's got to be here at 10 o'clock on Wednesday of the week before the next meeting, and it won't be here until Tuesday still.
10 o'clock.
So what do we
Wednesday?
Do to fix that? I mean, can it, was it because they couldn't get it to you?
Well, he was on
Monday.
Vacation. 10 o'clock that day, if it's not in, it misses one pay period. He can get paid the next pay period.
And that's
or then, like, just example, one of the deputies.
Oh, it's one department.
Investigator uses the time clock and will be using it. Had 2 days that he had 9 hours. Okay, didn't clock out for lunch either one of those days, but his timesheet says he took an hour lunch. I don't have a correction sheet telling me that that's wrong.
Mm-hmm.
So I can't take that hour away from there.
Right.
Same
so
with
I
this
go ahead
one.
And just push it through and do it, and we pay him 2 hours.
Salaries
hours.
Well, this is James.
Or do I sit there and wait for the correction sheet?
She says she took
And I assume you've sent an email to Klaus and Gus that says, these 2 hours are here. They're not there.
Oh, no, I didn't.
Okay.
You know,
and she's, I imagine she's just stressed out over there too right now. I mean, she, what else?
We won't get this anymore.
Yeah.
And if you have too much, I'd send it by email. So that it ain't your word, their word.
Punching on the
And then you can CC it to Gus or Klaus or whoever's their supervisor and say, you know, you're going to, department's going to pay 2 hours of overtime unless these are fixed.
Oh, gotcha.
There's no way to work around some of that. Yep. I mean,
I wonder how much of that is being done on purpose.
Some of this is just going to be where it's going to have to be in handbook that this is the way things are done. And when they're not, they're going to have to get written up for it. And then they quit doing this bull crap.
Right.
Yeah.
Give them one chance, and then the next time you don't get paid.
They have to approve the handbook just like everybody else. So if they've approved the handbook, of course that's something we probably need to
negotiate with them.
Yeah.
So we'll have to negotiate that with them.
Good point.
Pinkerton detectives.
Well, if they bring it up in the handbook and we don't approve it, then we don't approve it. Then they can take us to court or do whatever they want or CIR because we're. But we can say no. We aren't going to do that. This is what we'll do, and that's what we're negotiating.
I don't disagree with you on the week's time. I'm just being the devil's advocate here, saying that I can still see it being a problem because they'll still push that
down. Well, I would say if you
and I think
the
there's
though,
there's two things.
That time,
there's the ones that's always going to cause the problem.
I've missed pay periods. I miss pay periods
even
regularly
with no problem.
I don't get my hours. I don't fill in Fridays.
Yes.
Say I leave at 10 o'clock and I
because
go from the job to my house.
To have that amount,
I don't fill in Friday.
Tuesday morning at 8:30, she has to post the agenda.
I don't get paid Monday, so then I get paid the following.
What's our pay days?
I
mean, the best.
I know that ahead of time. I can go back and fill it out. Or
days.
You have
But I don't. I'm not surprised. This is the end of the world.
It's the flat rate.
Okay, so we get paid this Friday.
The flat rate.
Or half the flat.
It's for the last 2 weeks.
And then you make the adjustment the next period.
Yep.
You just make sure you don't overpay them.
You're getting a flat rate. We approve this on the 10th.
I
don't get paid on the 12th, but that's for the first week of June and the last week of May there.
Yeah. But I know that ahead of time.
It's 2 weeks before
I'm tired. I'll fill it out Monday.
And what they're saying, John, is...
week comes around, then I get...
But we have to have it in by the 8th.
But right. if we... Yeah,
I know
you
that
have
the same as they
the
know it, the same as
if
all
we
of us
move
know it.
So bad,
and with
you,
this timesheet that we got right yesterday...
So that first week in June is not paid, but you're getting paid for the 17th through the 30th.
Right now you're getting paid 1 week after you worked, basically.
Yeah.
We went to 2 weeks after you worked.
That's
then,
not
my responsibility.
Yeah. And you're basically moving it 1 week because we're off 1 week now.
That's not a big deal. I don't see that being an issue.
Yeah.
Absolutely is not. You're right.
And you'd be getting paid these 2 weeks.
What department was that from?
Yes.
Oh, they're going to be hot.
Wait, but who was that from? Where? Was that from the highway department?
No.
Which one was it?
The sheriff's office.
Oh. I had to get one more in, Denny.
Okay, you did. Good shot.
I'm done now.
Good shot.
So, this number that we have for this audit is $402,942.62.
That's for payroll.
Well, that includes claims, correct?
Oh, that includes claims. Okay.
So the vendor's tolls are marked here.
We had claims of $187,143.94.
So, yeah, that's my payroll included in that.
Okay.
So we'll have to...
So just the payroll would be...
Well, we need it for all claims, though, don't we? For approval, we just need all claims.
And it's 187.
Well, we already approved the.
Yeah, we did.
We already approved the claims, though.
That's what we approved.
We did approve.
Okay, 187. Yeah.
That 187,000.
143. No.
Say it again.
187.
143.
94. And then you also have to minus the
Eric's
out of 727.
No, I think that's included in that.
No.
Yeah, it is.
Yeah, that was out of the original.
You think so? Okay.
Yeah.
If not, we'll correct that next time.
Yeah.
So then what is our pay?
So our pay.
Payroll is 215.
798.68.
8-68. And if there are any more corrections, then we will handle those at our next meeting, approving those.
Okay. I just want to add these just to make sure.
Because you,
oh my, it's afternoon.
You know, actually, you mm-hmm. built this payroll, and then the corrections you got next week to make
more time
yet. Or whatever. Because you just, this is
oh,
it.
I
and
think
if
we're on
somebody hollers,
hours a day, 7 days a week.
Or whatever, because this is to get them all approved. This is what we have to do to get them approved at this. And then corrections will be forthcoming or whatever. Because this is a number you go with. And any more corrections now, you do. Once we approve this, this is it. Then any other corrections will be at our next meeting, not here. And then we'll have to document them or whatever at our next meeting. So.
Okay, so we're good with this 215, 798, 68.
798, 68. Need a motion.
Okay, I move.
What was our vendor total again?
187, 143, 94. Or we come up with a different number. Right.
So does this need to be added into the vendors?
This?
Yeah.
No.
No.
That's part of payroll.
Okay.
Yeah,
so.
More than.
77, 61, 79 plus. And just these? Mm-hmm. 187, 143, 94. Okay. I just wanted to make sure that was really right. So 215,
798, 68
is the payroll total.
Right. Need a motion to
approve those. Move to approve the payroll in the amount of $215,798.68.
Second.
Motion made by Lytle, seconded by Thiemann. Vote 5-0 with Jerkins and Bauman absent. And if there are any corrections, they will be made up at our next meeting. We will document them and have them available for our next meeting. So this is the payroll you go with.
Okay.
Thank you, Dan.
Thank you much.
Thanks, Deanna. Okay.
And if the girls have comments or stuff, make sure you guys bring them to us. Yeah. I don't know, you and Don are good about that.
I think they're pretty good about, telling Don.
Well, you guys are the ones that are actually, that's why I thought if there's going to be big complaining, it'd come from the clerk's office with everything, you know.
Well, I started talking and I kept seeing Matt going, kind of laughing at me. I thought, God, am I saying too much or what am I?
Well, no, those are the legitimate ones, though. That's where the actual issue comes from, learning how we're going to do it. That's the only legitimate.
Do you want to adjourn so we can?
Board of Supervisors meeting adjourned at 12:13. Yes. Now you can shut it all off. Thank you.